Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy, Cleveland! You know, there's a line in a Ricky Lee Jones song. Oh, what is that song? I'm trying to remember. It was Woody and Dutch on the slow train to Peking. And in the rap that sort of works its way through that tune, you hear Ricky Lee Jones say, "Man, I didn't even know what city I was in. You know, I don't think I was cut out to be a touring musician or a touring much of anything, frankly. Because I'm not sure where I am right now. No, I'm home. I'm so home, and I'm so happy to be here. Oh, mercy, but I'm happy to be home. And this is the first time I've been behind the home microphone and been completely at ease and not worried about, yeah, I'm worried about stuff breaking down, but that's another story. But in way over a week, I don't remember being away from the microphone for this long in a long time. Except I have been. But I always, Lord, I miss it. And I miss you guys. We'll figure out a way eventually to get phones going into our remote gigs, so that we can continue to have our conversations on a nightly basis. It was a profound and enjoyable and pleasurable and lots of hard work experience in Pittsburgh at Netroots Nation 2009. And many thanks go out to everybody who helped make that happen. First and foremost, y'all made it happen. And you tuned in and you caught all kinds of stuff being broadcast from the panels, from the plenary sessions. I enjoyed, of course, the time that Guy James and I got in which we were able to work together. That was just wonderful. The whole event was wonderful, and I can't wait to go back next year. This time having figured out, you know, the first run, you always figure out what you didn't know. And the second trip back, we'll get it even righter. And, of course, then I came home. And turned around and went off to another meeting that was where I was Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So Monday, I spent the day thinking this is Friday. I spent yesterday thinking it was Saturday. We'll have a harmonic convergence or the planets will line up or something, and I'll figure out what day it is. And I'm happy to report that at least here in my world, it's the 20th day of August. I think. Since I got in the door, I have been, bless her heart, Agnes has been going half mad in my absence because the minute I left, it's like the inner tubes knew that I was gone and, shh, Bob's gone. We're going to have fun now. And so phone service here has been intermittent. The inner tubes have been intermittent at best. We still have phone issues. I don't know if I can take a call from you tonight, but no way was I going to let that stop me from getting behind the microphone. So there's a lot of finger crossing going on here for now. So we'll find out later in the program. But seriously, to the whole crew at Netroots Nation, a huge thank you for all of their hard work. I met amazing. You couldn't turn around without meeting somebody absolutely amazing, somebody whose work you'd seen, somebody whose stories we'd reported here. I got to meet one of the most profoundly influential people on the left side of the internet. I got to meet John Amato, from the originator of Crooks and Liars, whose work we comment on and work we use frequently on this network. And I'm looking forward to building on that building on that introduction. I had a nice conversation with Dave Nyward, who also blogs at Crooks and Liars. The Eliminationists is his book, and it is a brilliant explication of the urge of right wingers to do physical bodily harm to those with whom they disagree. And Dave is staying right on top of that issue. In fact, I told him, and I have to shoot him an email. I have to say, because it's not, this doesn't happen every day, I have to shoot him the email of the July 4th eliminationist behavior at Cayford Mountain, at Larry Gibson's Mountain Keepers Festival on the 4th of July. I think he'll be amazed. Amazed, horrified, lots of words to go with that. Oh, who else? Too many names to know. Did I meet? And it was an amazing experience. Guy James was tremendous. How about Matt Osborne's live blogging, huh? Did you catch some of that? Wow, did he do a good job? Wow. It was a team effort put together by people who were hard pressed to get everything done that needed done, and yet somehow managed to do so. Nick Regalado, the Coalfield Kingsnake, came along later in the conference and provided much needed assistance. The whole event was just a little. No, it wasn't a miracle. Because this is explainable. This was explainable through nothing but the hard work and dedication of everyone on either end of a microphone or a keyboard or an internet connection. Everyone associated with the horn made this happen and did so and made me prouder than I know how to express. So that's thank you. Thank you to all, each and every one of you. It was simply stunning. So hopefully we're now in a position to sort of catch up, get things back in order. I've had some wonderful emails while I've been gone. And, you know, by all means, don't be shy. You know the email address, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, Bob Kincaid, @gmail.com. You know the phone numbers. We're praying that the phones work. Let me know by email if you try to call and it doesn't work. But the phone number, of course, 877-443-2366. Curiously enough, that spells 877, the numeral 4, head on. 877-443-2366. Or on your own nickel if you want to save us a little bit, 304-658-3333. You're welcome to join us, of course, as always, in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. And that's how you get there, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Boom, you're there, and you are part of the wonderful cast of characters that are in there now. Great crowd building. Blue Ape Cobwebs, the Cossack is in there. Garrett's in there. Jersey, John 16, Lilo, who Guy and I got to meet Lilo, which was so cool, and there are photographs. There really are photographs of Lilo rubbing Guy James's and my heads for luck. I don't know how lucky we are, but the order was out there, and she did fulfill that order. Sparky and Sophie and Potter and Poppy and Lottie and Trouble are all in the chat room. Join in if you've never been there. Go on in, introduce yourself, have a great time, say howdy. And they'll all say howdy back. In fact, I think the chat room itself will tell you howdy when you first sign in. And lastly, because I didn't really get to talk with you afterwards, all of this was so very important because on Saturday we put together the Green Begins in Appalachia Ending Mountaintop Removal panel there at Netroots Nation. Had a really, really good crowd. And I have to extend profound thanks to Lorella Scarborough, to Stephanie Pastello, and to Jeff Biggers for coming along on that panel, because they made it what was later described as the most profound panel that has ever taken place at Netroots Nation's 4 years. It was... It moved me in ways that I'm hard pressed to describe, but it was part of why it was so important that we be there. Because you and I, we talk about mountaintop removal a lot. I'm involved with groups that are single-mindedly focused on ending that great big picture window into hell that is open on Appalachia. Because we are so on top of the issue, we often forget that there are a lot of people who have never heard of it yet. Most of whom, when they do hear about it, would be as horrified as most people are and add their voice to the call for an end to it. And being able to present that panel on this Saturday past to people who were unfamiliar with it marks a real step forward in the attempt to end it. And y'all are responsible. Y'all were responsible for that, too. And the photos are out there. I have the photos. I will get the photos. Yes. Talking about, where's the pictures of you getting your head rubbed, Bob? Well, they exist, and they will go down the they will go through the inner tubes at some time in the fairly near future. This has been one of the most amazing, exhausting weeks in my life. And of course, in my absence, while I was gone, Agnes made sure that Ferg and Doodle made it to football and cheerleading practice, respectively. So that they're cruising along in that, and I can't wait to see go out and see them both in action. It's been right busy, very busy indeed. And so the question I have for you is, and by the way, the video of the Netroots Nation panel is available on the Horn website, I do believe. If you haven't seen it yet and you want to, please avail yourself of that opportunity. And again, like I said, my question for you is, the phone is actually ringing. This is a good sign. All right, stand by, and we will go to the phones momentarily. Is the main point of concern, our main point of concern, your main point of concern, at present still the ongoing healthcare debate? It certainly was at high prominence in Pittsburgh over the last week, and of course the eliminationist business continues. A report out from the New York Times yesterday about some of the dirty dealings of the Central Intelligence Agency. You're not surprised, I'm not surprised, but still it's when the facts come out and you actually take them out and look at them and sort of hold the arm's length. Holy crap, they actually did. Yeah, the CIA hired Blackwater for an assassination program. We can talk about that later in the evening, see how you feel about it. It makes me just want to puke. There's a whole, you know, there's tons of stuff out there. The eliminationism, the town hall craziness, idiots running around with guns. No end. No end. Oh, and by the way, in case you were wondering, Minnesota's very own Michelle Bachmann is still crazier than a sprayed roach. And proving not just her insanity, but her ignorance as well. We can get into some of that, too. For now, however, at a quarter past the hour, as we begin this first show back in way too long a period of time, let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Matt, what's up?
Oh, let's see. A lot has been going on. You were just talking about some of the stuff that's happened this week. I did note that yesterday it seemed like the tide had kind of turned. Like, I saw the headline on the Huffington Post that you have the healthcare supporters outnumbering the protesters at the town hall. And it seems like we're taking back the town hall. And, you know, you've got reports now coming in of town halls where the protesters don't even show up. I think to some degree they've jumped the shark and they know it. They have jumped the couch, even, if you want to go with the pop culture phrase of the day. You know, remember when Tom Cruise jumped
the couch? Exactly.
His career never recovered. Well, we kind of have had that moment this week. You know, we just had enough craziness. We had the guns showing up. You know, people started to get... I mean, let's face it, most people, yeah, we understand people protesting for their gun rights, but really, what's the point of bringing a rifle to a town hall? There's only two reasons that I can think of why you would bring it. One is to get attention, and two is to intimidate. And neither one is a very good reason for it.
Or don't forget, three, to kill somebody.
Right, yeah, there's that too, except that you probably wouldn't be displaying it openly. You'd just start shooting. You know? It is just, I think we went too far, or they went too far, and they've sort of have gone past that point in the zeitgeist where they're no longer cool, especially, I mean, we have to just hand it to Barney Frank. He finally showed Democrats that what you need to do when you're doing a town hall meeting and you get this craziness, exactly what you need to do. You can't engage it. You have to ridicule it, and you have to move on.
And I happen to have that audio here, and I hope I get to it at some point. For anyone who hasn't heard it yet, I don't necessarily always agree. But then again, who do I always agree with? I don't even always agree with me. I was going to say I don't always agree with Barney Frank on everything, but wow, did he get this one? I mean that baseball hanging in the middle of his power zone must have looked like the size of a cantaloupe to him, because he drove it plumb out of the park with that insane woman.
Now, you know that Dave Weigel at the Washington Independent today has confirmed that woman who asked that question is a Lyndon LaRouche.
Oh, why am I not surprised?
Why are we not surprised? We have repeat offender wing nuttery going on here.
And, you know, I gotta tell you something, because this, speaking of wing nuttery, as we were driving home from Kentucky yesterday, I looked over, and I was driving. I really should have had my eyes on the road, but I just sort of, you know how it is when you're driving along and you check your rear view, check your left side mirror, check your right side mirror. Well, I'd just gotten done taking a glance at my right side mirror when a banner caught my eye up on a hillside in Kentucky. And the banner said, Rand Paul 10.
Rand Paul 10?
Yes.
They're running Ayn Rand with...
Ron Paul, so devotedly adored Ayn Rand and her anarcho-capitalist the babblings, that he named one of his sons after her. And he is running for office in Kentucky in 2010, and his name is Rand Paul. And I thought, oh, goody, another wingnut in the mix. Just what we were needing just right now.
Yeah, yeah. They are kind of an American classic. I don't know. It's as if, I don't know, it's kind of the wingnut version of Sea Rock City or something. That's what the Ron Paul... cult has become.
Right, because I don't see there's just not a lot of difference between Ron Paulers and LaRouchers.
No, there's no difference at all, except party membership. Ron Paul is, in fact, a barely loyal Republican.
True.
And LaRouche is just crazy.
Yeah.
Of course, he called himself a Democrat, which is bizarre. It's a story in and of itself. But I got to tell you, I've already been putting what I learned at Netroots Nation to good work this week.
Have you really?
Yeah. Little story that I have come across. You may have heard earlier this week, CBS did a show about, or did a segment about this conservative alternative to the AARP.
Yeah, I did read some about that.
Yeah, if you look at my website, there is it's way many posts down net right now, but it's the American Seniors Association is this conservative alternative, and they say, oh, 60,000 people have torn up their AARP cards and joined our organization, which it turns out is about a week's worth of losses for the AARP. It's just a drop in the bucket, even if it is true, which it's not, because 60,000 is a very nice round number. You know, it just, it really strikes that part in your mind that says, that's got to be bull. That's got to be made up. It's like Pentagon casualty figures from Vietnam. Just nice round numbers. 60,000 is too big, too round. So, you know, other people have been digging into those numbers. Well, I decided I wanted to know more about American Seniors Association. So I took that muckraking 101 class while I was there. You remember that?
Yeah, which I have a feeling was really cool.
Oh, it was very cool. And this is what I found. The website for American Seniors Association, which, by the way, is an amateurish website. But if you go to that website and do a Whois lookup, that's to determine who registered this website.
Right.
It is registered to one Amy Sullenberger. Amy Sullenberger is a employee. This is on her own profile now. She is an employee of the Georgia Republican Party.
You know, you don't even, they're not even trying to hide it very well anymore, are they, Matt?
No, they don't hide it very well anymore. They don't even bother. Because they know that CBS is going to give them breathless stenography. That's what they're doing. They're just taking shorthand, and reporting it as fact. They're not doing any fact-checking, source-checking, anything. In fact, that's the name of the post, CBS, Breathless Stenography. Also, I learned from...
add corporate to the front of that, and you've got, you've got new meaning to their little initials, Corporate Breathless Stenography.
Oh, I like that. I didn't even think of that. Corporate Breathless Stenography. CBS. That's a very good one. I'm going to have to retitle the blog post now.
Oh, dear.
Oh, guess what? Dick Armey?
Yes.
Great name. Dick Armey, you may have heard that he lost his job with the Texas law firm because some of the clients complained, right? They complained about his ties to Freedom Works. And, oh, isn't that just so sad, Bob? Are you sad?
I am dabbing furiously at my eyes.
Yeah, you know, he's not hurting. He makes $200 an hour working for Freedom Works.
Good work if you can get it.
On their tax return. You know, they're a...
And that's on top of his congressional pension, right?
That's right. On top of his congressional pension, he's making $200 an hour doing what?
And he's still got that socialized congressional health care, right?
That's right. You get that for life when you're in Congress.
Man, what a dodge.
What a dodge. You know, I call them Cessna conservatives. These are people who are... They have no concept of the way that normal people live in America. They have no concept of what it's like to work for a living. If they ever had that concept, it's long in their past. But they will stand up there every day and tell us that they're the ones who understand. We understand you. We're real people. They're not. They'll accuse Democrats of being elitist, but in fact, they're the biggest elitists in the bunch. It's not to say that Democrats can't be elitist. They certainly can. But I don't think I can think, I can't think of a single Republican right now off the top of my head who's in Congress and has ever had a real job. Can you?
If you put me on the spot, I gotta say no.
That's worthy of investigation. You know, hey, I would love for the wingnutosphere to tell me I'm wrong. I would love for them to investigate and show me where, you know, all these Republicans in the Senate, you know, had real jobs one time where they had to work with their hands for a living. Hand to mouth. I would love to see that. But you know what? I have a feeling none of them will ever be able to tell me that because I don't think it ever happened.
I think you've got a, yeah.
I don't know if you noticed this, but today Tom Ridge came out. Mr. Tom Ridge, former Secretary of...
Yeah, I did. You know, Tom Ridge needs to stay off of small aircraft now. He's officially on that list.
Oh, yeah. Especially with what he said. I mean, if you come out and say that President Bush manipulated the terror alert levels for political purposes, when you actually say that, you're just basically, you're putting a crosshair on your own head.
And he said that Rumsfeld and Crisco John wanted to deliberately manipulate the terror levels to provide political help for George W. Bush.
That's exactly what he said.
And he said it in a book, no less, you know, that went through galleys and proofs and a publisher and last but not least, the legal department that is staffed with 100 terrified lawyers who are afraid they're going to get sued over every last article and preposition in any given book from Green Eggs and Ham all the way up to the Bible.
That's right.
And it got and it got past them. That says something.
Says a lot. It's been a heck of a week. You know, we were taking back the town halls and everything, like I was saying. Do you remember how many times we heard it at Netroots Nation last week? How many times we heard how important it was for everybody who was there to go back and really push, for public involvement in healthcare reform?
I do.
And I think it happened. I think it worked. You couldn't have timed that conference any better.
I think you're absolutely right, and are you just totally stoked to go back next year?
Yes, I totally am. I don't care if I have to walk there.
No, we'll see if we can keep that from happening. We've got a year to make this happen. So cross your fingers.
Crossing my fingers, but I can't keep them crossed because I have to type. Listen, I still have to tell you, just for your listeners who weren't there, even if you watched it. Even if you listen to it, if you weren't there, you just don't understand. Bob was amazing. And that mountaintop removal panel was by far the most affecting panel I went to that weekend. And I went to some really good panels.
Oh, there were tons of good panels.
Yes, there were tons of them. But yours just blew me away. And Bob, I was speechless by the time you were done.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say.
And before I get off here, Bob, I want to ask you one thing, just for your listeners to talk about for your listeners. I think I brought this up to you last week. Came across an article recently about peak coal.
Yes.
Yeah. The idea is that, you know, this number that we hear that America has 250 years worth of coal, it's just a made up number. The coal industry has nothing to back that up. And in fact, it looks like the limits of coal are already here. Now, how does that figure into the equation when you're talking about mountaintop removal?
Well, and you can drill down one level deeper, Matt, when you want to. Peak coal was passed in Appalachia decades ago. That's why, at least in the most of the thought is, that's why they're going after this crappy stuff, that's a seam a foot thick, because they're going to leech every last little bit of profit out of Appalachia that they can possibly get before they say goodbye, suckers, and leave us wallowing in their filth. Because that's what coal companies do. But yeah, Pete Coal, yeah, sure. We don't have an easy cushion of coal to sit back and burn at our leisure. Even if you set aside for a moment, Matt, how toxic burning coal is.
No, don't we know it?
But the idea that we've got a lot less than we think, is something that we need to pay a great deal of attention to, because one, if it is less than they're telling us, and I'm sure, you know, the coal industry, lie, perish the thought. Then we'd better guard what we have for instance, national security metallurgical purposes, and we might want to think about not burning so darn much of the stuff. And, you know, as our buddy Benedict at Large is noting in the chat room, he says, you can tell peak coal's been reached when mountaintop mining begins.
Interesting.
You know, driving back yesterday from Kentucky, my traveling companion, Lorella Scarborough, it's Kentucky, it's coal country, it's the hills of eastern Kentucky, and we'd see these outcroppings of coal. And she noticed one, and she looked up and said, hey, look at that seam over there. Oh, they'll come back for that one. Gonna come back for that one. And for the next 10 minutes, gonna come back for that one. They've got a map. Oh, rapacious bastards. But, you know, there is good news, as Jeff Biggers noted last Saturday. Coal's contribution to the nation, to the national energy demand, is down to 42% and falling.
Uh-huh. And falling. Nowhere to go but down, apparently.
But that's okay, because Don Blankenship's having him a Friends of America rally on the Labor Day right here in West Virginia, down Logan County.
I heard you guys talking about that afterwards, and that just makes
Yeah, sure. Ted Nugent going to come and moderate it with his goons.
Ugh.
And Taylor Made, washed up for God knows how long off the country charts, going to come and play some music. And Bo Cephas, Hank Williams Jr.'s are coming. Oddly enough, Hank Williams III is not, which tells me something, because I have a lot more respect for Hank Williams III.
Amen.
Who else? That life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity's coming. And just as a sort of reminder to the folks who may not have it right at the tip of their tongue, and this is not something you'd want on the tip of your tongue or any part of your tongue, but the fact of the matter is, by his own admission, Ted Nugent dodged the draft by befouling himself for several weeks.
You?
And then marching into the draft board with urine and feces crusted all over himself.
What a wonderful plan to get.
And so he's gonna be the moderator at a rally that's gonna tell us hillbillies how to be friends of America.
Friends of America.
God, I was about to say I wouldn't pee on Ted Nugent if he was on fire, but he already did it for himself. So,
man, I tell you what, my phone's about out of juice.
How are you charging that thing now that I have your charger that you left?
You know what? I'm not. I'm on my last two little bars of battery power. I've been keeping the thing off all week because you said that you would be back on Thursday.
Bless your heart, and I'm going to dig that out of the I'll dig that charger out of the gig bag and get it into the postal service as quickly as I possibly can.
Much appreciated, man.
That goes high on the list for tomorrow morning's first activities, Matt.
Thank you.
And I have to, before you do lose your last couple of bars of battery, let me thank you. You did yeoman work. You had a busted toe and you were still humping equipment. We walked all over. You know, I'd say you, me, and Guy probably were putting in 5 miles a day just inside that convention center.
Oh yeah.
And you never complained. And somewhere along the way, you found time to write some stunning blog work.
Thank you.
And I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed having you there.
That was one of the best weeks I've ever had last week. And I'm very eager to go back. I tell you, it's really something when you started blogging and you only know people by their byline. Digby.
Yeah, you met Digby.
You meet these people in real life, and I don't know, it just becomes a whole new thing. It's like I came back with a completely new energy for this work.
You know, it was so cool. You came up, the guy and I were sitting there, and you went, I just met Howard Dean. I just met Howard Dean. I met Howard Dean. And I guess I'm a little bit jaded, because I remember turning to you, stick with Guy and me, and you're going to meet all kinds of people. And that especially applies to Guy. I mean, he has this way of getting people onto his program, and people, you know, there are people that you and I go, holy crap, that's fill in the blank. And they run the Guy. Guy, how are you?
Yeah, and I really enjoyed Guy, too.
Isn't he a prince of a guy?
A great guy.
He is a prince among men, truly.
He truly is. And, I couldn't have made it up there without you. I mean, I don't know if your listeners are aware of this, but... I basically scraped together everything I had just to get there, and I couldn't have done that without you, and I couldn't have gotten in there in the first place without you. So all that yeoman work you're talking about, my friend, it wouldn't have happened without Bob Kincaid. So thank you for that opportunity.
Well, and many thanks, of course, to the whole Horn family who made so very much of it possible.
Yes, thank you. All you listeners out there, you're awesome.
Indeed, indeed. Well, Matt, take care, and hopefully that charger will find you in Monday's mail.
I will send you an email right now, my friend.
Yes, I need snail mail address, lickety split, please.
Okay, but don't share it with anyone because you know I'm paranoid.
Oh, it's only paranoia is the irrational fear that people are out to get you. There really are people out to get you.
Tell your listeners what we found downstairs on Saturday. Tell them what we found in the elevator and downstairs.
Exactly. We found creepy refugees from the rightonline.org convention over in Sheraton Station Square infiltrating our little liberal meeting. In fact, I saw one of those freaks earlier, and Guy James spotted him too. There's a guy named John Fund. You may be familiar with him, Matt.
Hmm?
And yeah. John Fund writes I don't know if he still does or not. I don't read the crap. But did some op-ed work for the Wall Street Journal. But John Fund is one of those guys for whom the question, "When did you stop beating your wife?" is not unfair. You know, most people, that's the ultimate example of an unfair question because there's no right answer. Because on the one hand, if you say you did, well, I didn't, well, then you're still beating your wife. And if you say, well, last week, then it admits that up until last week, you were beating your, and there's no fair answer to it. But in John Fund's case, he is a woman beater. And that's the proud, upstanding, conservative, God-fearing, hero, the big name in the business. And of course, over there at their little Klan rally or whatever it is they were having at the Station Square, they also had Michelle Malkin, and they had Joe the not a Joe, Sam the plumber not a plumber, Wurzel Weasel Booger Backer.
Really, is eliminationism in the last few days. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
They snuck over, some of them did, snuck over into Netroots Nation and went scurrying back like the little cockroaches they are, back over to their little right-wing convention. And when they came in to ours, they turned their credentials over so that no one would see that.
They didn't hide them very well. They still stuck out like sore thumbs.
Oh, yeah. They had those conservative fumes coming off of them.
That woman just screamed holy roller to me. I'm sorry. She had the look. I could tell that she was not used to walking in a knee skirt. She was used to something longer and looser. You know, they just screamed right wing at me loud and clear.
Yeah, the only thing she was missing was the hair done up to Jesus.
All right, man, I've got to go, but thanks a lot.
All right, later, Matt. Thanks so much for ringing in.
Okay, you be good now.
Take care now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That, of course, is our Netroots Nation blogger. That was Matt Osborne of OsborneInc.com, OsborneInc.com. Osborne Inc., a damn fine writer Matt is, and doggone good production assistant, even though he was learning it on the fly. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good after evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, how in the world are you?
Well, I'm here for prayer meeting a day late, but we made it.
Hallelujah.
I don't know. Let's see. What can I start with? Okay. Can we get any one of these bastards on the mainstream media to please tell us the truth and quit trying to tell us that Bob Novak was a wonderful person?
You know, I've been thinking about Bob Novak ever since I saw the announcement. And I've been, I've been trying to live, Luke, by the... what I call the thumper theory. You remember the movie Bambi, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thumper, what have I told you? If you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all.
Well, I'm sorry to say I can't do that.
Now, I know. See, I knew it was going to be a war I was going to lose, too.
Well, my first thought was, let's get a sharp stake and a couple of hammers. And...
Yeah, I want to know he's in the box.
You know, it's just... Oh, God, you know.
Can we bury him, can we bury him at a garlic farm?
Upside down.
Yeah.
Start digging. Go ahead. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, I hear all these nice things. I'm sitting there going, for the last 5 years, the man should have been in an orange jumpsuit living in Cuba.
Exactly. You know, maybe last week he should have been released for mercy's sake, just like they did with that guy in Scotland.
Well, let's play on the media bit here now. You did see that the Fox Out of Business channel is trying to get timeless so they can actually get somebody to watch their channel.
I did see that. That's how does that work with business? I'm getting the idea that times are tough over at Murdoch World. You saw where he's shutting down one of his papers, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I sent you the thing whenever they were talking about Beck, and I said, you know, I don't know who needs to do it. But I want somebody to shove a microphone in his face with somebody with a camera, and I want him to either say, I support Glenn Beck, or say, I totally disavow Glenn Beck, and then I want the next question to be, then, why are you leaving him on the air? If you disavow him, then you explain why you give him airtime. If you think this is totally, you know, if he tries to claim that, oh, it's just him making up his own decision, I'd say, look, you're the one putting him on the air. If he wants to go stand on the street corner, that's great. We ain't trying to say he can't talk, but no one said he has the right to a TV show.
Exactly.
That ain't the First Amendment.
Not by a long shot.
Unless, of course, Justice Scalia decides to rewrite it again.
Oh, don't take me there. The business with he just had to bring that back up, the business about the Constitution not guaranteeing an innocent man the right not to be executed.
I know. Well, I my favorite one with him still is, you know, he believes every amendment to the Constitution is sacrosanct, except for that second one where those words "well regulated" just kind of fade away on his copy. And and like I said, they can have all the muskets and flintlocks they want. But you know what? That's what that was written for. It wasn't written for semi-automatic weaponry.
And there's no tanks, there's no laser sights in the Second Amendment. There aren't even revolvers, if it loads by the muzzle, according to the straight language, you're welcome to it.
Yeah, but let's see what else we get tonight. Tonight on Mr. Colbert, he has Tweety Birds going to be on. This could be fun. And John Stewart's going to have a fun one, too. Did you see who he's got on?
No.
This lady named Betsy McCoffey. She's the head wingnut behind the town hall meetings. She's one of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Is she like M-C-C-A-U-G-H-E-Y?
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it. I thought it was McCaughey.
Yeah, indeterminate vowels. They're the bane of my existence.
But that should be good. You know, because I enjoyed him last night, his thing on Barney Frank. He was just cheering it on. You know. And what else we got here? I'll write my little list down.
Sure.
I'm still waiting for somebody in the mainstream media. Next time they have somebody on that wants to complain about the health care, I say, that's fine. They're going to set up a free speech zone down the road here with some razor wire and some guard dogs. And you go there and you have all the talk you want to. Now, does this remind you of anything?
Yeah, that would be...
Wayback Machine back 2 years.
Yeah, for terrorist T-shirts.
I know. And I'm curious, with somebody, one of these... But one of these mainstream media talkers, other than the people on MSNBC who do it well, I want somebody to mention the fact that Glenn Beck's lost over 20 advertisers. It would be interesting to see if they would bother mentioning that when they talk about it. But amazingly enough, that doesn't seem to be something they want anybody in the public to know.
Well, it's August and the crickets are out.
Well, and I've got a new timeline now. Okay, we got Swift Boaters, go to the Shavo Complainers, go to the Palin crowd, go to the Teabaggers, go to the Town Hall AstroTurfers. This is a good group. I mean, they travel everywhere. It looks like every year they find something new to push.
Well, you know, I think that Matt Osborne's observation as well may be coming true, because all these teabagging, birthing, deafing, energy taxing right-wing freaks are beginning to have a few problems. There's a story that broke today.
Well, starting to notice them and keep track of them.
Yeah, but there's a story that broke today, Luke.
Mm-hmm.
That the American Petroleum Institute, and of course they've got this road show going on right now, where they
somebody called it it's their company picnic that now masquerades as a grassroots organization.
Exactly. What are they calling it? Energy Citizens Gatherings.
Yeah. Was it some group, Citizens United, which is a real grassroots group, went to it? They said that's what the fellow said from it. He said this is a company picnic. This isn't a protest.
But here's the funny part: a group was invited. You know, one of those Dick Army freedom groups,
Freedom Works
groups, were invited to the public. Let's see. I'm looking at the story here real quick. Grassroots Tea Party activists organized by Freedom Works and invited by Freedom Works to this API company picnic. Well, they showed up with their American flags to the new Energy Citizens Coalition.
Okay.
And the oil companies told them their American flags wasn't welcome. Now, this here was in Houston, Texas.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure this one out.
It's the South. You're Southern. I'm Southern. We can talk about this. When they took away our Confederate flags, we adopted the other one.
Yeah.
And, you know, Southern politicians are all the time wanting to ban the burning of the flag and go home and tell the constituency about how they fought back that socialist health care reform and introduced a constitutional amendment to burn the flag. And these people laid hands on the flag and told them, you can't bring that in here. I think we may have they're saying here, average citizens who were not employed by big oil or gas companies tried to attend the API AstroTurf event but were denied access. Despite numerous online claims that the event was open to the public, it seems the event was really only a company picnic for employees of companies like ConocoPhillips.
Yeah. Well, a minute ago you were talking about the AARP. Glenn Greenwald had a thing over at, I think it's Common Dreams, where he posted the thing that the AP put out that apparently no one's paying attention to, that the people from AARP say they lose 300,000 people a month every month.
Yeah, to death.
You know.
Older people's organization.
Was it they lose $300,000 a month, and I think they said since July they've signed up 400,000 new people because we're getting older, and the baby right now is the baby boomer into the baby boomers.
Yeah, the baby boomers will make them. They're practically a political party.
Mm-hmm.
But sure, I mean, you're going to have losses to attrition, you know, just like they do over at Americans for Smokers' Rights.
But you know what I mean? There they are whining about they lost 60,000 people. It's like they lost 300,000. That was just 60,000 of them. There's 240,000 others that left for this strange reason called death.
There you go. And every year somebody has it's sort of a turn on that it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Well, you know, somebody's 50 years old somewhere. And isn't 50 years old the point at which you get to join the AARP?
Yeah, I did.
Sorry, wasn't.
That's okay. I say this, that's because I is a member. I'll say that right now. When I turned 50, I said, "Hey, this one of the little perks I get. I'm gonna go for it."
And you got your little McDonald's seniors card, and you can get yourself a senior coffee. See, I'm a little bit younger than you, Luke, so I still take umbrage when they offer me the senior discount, or I did the first couple of times at you know, Wendy's, McDonald's, whatever. But now when they do, I take it. I'm no dummy.
Hey, I thank you kindly. Pour a little bit more in there, please. Thank you. You know. I consider it sort of the reward for making it this far, not having kicked off.
There you go. Exactly.
But you know what I mean. It's one of these things where, you know, other than watching, like, say, what we watch now, you know, like watching the people on MSNBC and watching maybe Bill Maher and watching Colbert and Stewart, most of the people in the press I wouldn't give a holler and a hole about. You know what I mean? Because most of them just give you the headline. It's like, why don't you try reading the story, find out what you're talking about before you talk about it? I have a feeling if you sit there and read some of their story, you'd watch their faces fall. You know, here's what you claim. Now let's see what the story actually says. Because most times, as you and I both know, the headline on the story may not have anything at all to do with the story because an editor put that on there. That one didn't come most times from the reporter.
No, it didn't. And
most people don't know that when you see a headline, the reporter, 9 times out of 10, had nothing to do with that headline.
And sometimes the reporter calls the editorial office and says, what were you people thinking?
Did you bother to read the story before you put that headline on it just for the fun of it? You know, or were you just counting words?
Yeah, you know, it's like the headline writer over at CNN.com. I don't know who that person is.
Oh, Lordy B. Well, it's like they worry is he needs to cut back on his medication. You know.
Well, and you know, and too cute by half. Let's see, where is it?
One thing I got thinking about, we talked about this before. I still would want somebody somewhere to find it. I want to see if Limbaugh actually put in for medical coverage when he lost his hearing. Because I'm curious, wouldn't that be Medicare or insurance fraud? With the fact that the reason you went deaf was because you were abusing an illegal drug.
That's true, and I have no doubt whatsoever that his coverage kicked in for his, you know, for when he went off to Arizona to pet the horses.
But you know what I mean. But when he did that, I remember because people were talking about OxyContin, and they were talking about the fact that one of the side effects of overuse of OxyContin is deafness.
Yes, it is, and I think that is also generally a problem with. You know, opiate abuse in general.
Yeah. Yeah, I would just love somebody to ever look at that story. Oh, speaking of stories, have you seen this thing that's been going on now with Mr. Stoffel of 2020?
Yeah, you'd kind of like to hope that sucker loses his job.
You know, you're hoping more people keep talking about it, you know what I mean? Because, you know, here he is going up there to work for the right-wingers, but still wants to keep his job doing news magazine stuff for 2020. Or whatever ABC show they want to put him on. I mean, this is a guy who's been a corporatist from day one. You go back and look at his history, and like I say, I'm just amazed that he's gotten away with some of the stuff he's gotten away with over the years. You know, I mean, because he's been caught, you know, essentially reading the company byline in some of his stories. You know what I mean? Where he'd say, "Oh, here's here's what this is. And it's like, no, that's just what the company said. They look at the facts.
But in John Stossel's world, what the company said is the facts.
Is the fact. Well, I tell you what, Bud, I'm going to let you go on. I know we've been on too long.
No, not too long at all. Good to hear from you, though, Luke.
Well, I hope you had a good trip back from Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm still catching up. I'm working on a sleep deficit that's going to be a while getting caught up. But it was awful good travels all the way around. And,
alrighty then.
I wouldn't have missed it.
We're getting some off and on thunderstorms, so you may be getting something up your way soon.
I heard a little rumble of thunder in the distance not too about an hour ago, so I wouldn't be surprised. You know, it's that time of year.
We've had them off and on all day.
Well, let me ask you.
Which half hour is the sun? Which half hour is the storm?
Let me ask you before you go. Anything fun or exciting out of August practice down there at UT?
Not particularly. It's fun if you go over to SI. Oh, they're got a big thing over on Kiffin. They're trying to ask if he's shot himself in the foot by running his mouth, and it's like, look, he did that to get himself noticed. You know, we know that. I mean, you know, I'm to the point now. I'm just kind of over it. You know what I mean? If you read the stuff over at SI from their people, you think he'd slit somebody's throat along the way. It's like, you know, guys, when you're doing the SEC preview, you need to talk about all the schools.
Not a bad idea.
Oh, well.
I mean, there are several schools there, and but then again, how many articles can you write about what a jerk Nick Saban is?
Yeah. Well, you know how it is. It's like, say, I know you. I don't think you get it, but like, say, we get Comcast Sports South, which, of course, comes out of beautiful downtown Atlanta. So every time we turn around and you get the local people on there, they're telling you what a wonderful team Georgia is. You know, and it's like, I'm sorry, ain't nobody that good.
No.
No.
But, you know, what's his name? The head coach, Mark Richt, is, of course, Jesus' best friend. So.
Yeah, that's one of them things. When you read things like that, I'm sorry, I worry. Because that tells me there's something going to appear someday that's just going to blow that right out of the water.
Well, you know, he'll be seen walking out of the C Street house or something like that.
Oh, that's apparently getting better and better from Miss Maddow reporting it all the time.
Yeah, I'm just so proud of her for bulldogging that.
Well, I sent you the one from the, and I'm sorry I had to do that, but it was from the World.
The World magazine. Yeah, I had seen the reference to that, and then I was glad to get the link because I got to read the article. You know, that may be as tough as anything that's been written about them, and it comes from their own corner.
Well, I mean, these people are looking at it, and they're going, hey, that ain't us either. I mean, these guys are so far out there, they're like the right-wing version of the LaRouche people.
Well, yeah, well, what they are is the Protestant evangelical equivalent of Opus Dei.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. They're the ones that scare the normal religious people, because they're looking at this going, what the, you know, are you talking about?
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, we believe in talking snakes, but, you know, there's a limit to everything.
Apparently not with these people.
No, especially if there's a woman involved, or sex with someone or something.
Well, we'll go with that for right now, you know, until the pictures are developed. All right, then.
You take care, Luke.
I'll talk at you next week.
All right, bye now.
See you.
Some people claim that there's a woman to blame, but I know it's all C Street's fault. Sorry, Jimmy. So we're right up on top of the end of the first hour of tonight's program. Your thoughts are more than welcome. Catch me up. I've been gone a little bit. I've seen some things here and there, but I'm not entirely up to speed. Just for the fun of it, let's do go back to this and see how folks felt about being told they couldn't bring their American flags to that Energy Citizens Coalition rally down in Texas.
An email encouraging me to come.
And it was from Energy Citizens.
You know, it was not from Energy Citizens, but I don't know, actually. It was from an individual who said, please invite people to come.
They said then they won't let you have an American flag either. They said, we won't let you have this. And the guy touched it.
I got an email from FreedomWorks saying,
From FreedomWorks.
Yeah, saying, come, it's free, free food, do-da-do-da. And then I get here and they're saying, well, it's against fire code to let too many people in the door. So, and then they let all these people in. Granted, one of them was Drayton McLean, so.
Yes, Drayton McLean.
God is. He's got more money than God.
That's
so
like
I guess.
God's sort of patron.
Yeah.
Poor little wingnuts. Poor little wingnuts. Don't even have the first flippin' clue of how they're being used. But I tell you what, it is nice to be back in the home studio, and it's nice to be back with all of y'all. We'll jump back into it in the second hour. You jump in, like I said, help me get caught up. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. If you need us to carry the toll-free freight, we're more than happy to do so. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on, is how you get into the program. And, of course, email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn.
Days drift by, they don't have names. None of the streets here look the same. There are so many quiet places. Smiling eyes match the smiling faces.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is Brad Friedman of the Green News Report. Desi and I are off camping this week, but we prepared this report for you before we left.
Making molehills out of mountains. Thunder down under. Plus, the plight of the humble bee.
Very good, Des. All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report. The humble bee.
Sure. Well, scientists believe they have pinpointed the cause of colony collapse disorder, the mysterious condition that has decimated bee populations in the United States and Europe in some areas by more than half. The honeybee is a critical pillar of the food supply, essential for fruit and nut production all over the world. Researchers with Washington State University say the disappearance of the bees seems to be a combination of stresses. They found high levels of pesticide and beeswax in old hives, suggesting that even pesticides sprayed years ago linger in the hives, and that exposure affects bees' immunity to another factor, evidence of a micropathogen that was only first identified in the United States back in 2007, but they say has already spread to hives across the United States.
So how long has this been going on, this disappearance of the honeybee?
Over the last 3 years, that's when beekeepers have noticed and said to research organizations, hey, somewhere between a third and a half of our bees have disappeared.
And what's the downside? I mean, for folks who don't know...
The downside is, as Mark Twain once put it, if the honeybee goes away, the human population will die out within 4 years because there won't be any enough food to go around.
Did Mark Twain put it that way?
Yes, he did.
Okay, then. He's a smart guy.
The U.S. could cut its energy use by a quarter and save $1.2 trillion in just 10 years by focusing on energy efficiency, according to a new study from consulting firm McKinsey. They recommend everything from very simple no-brainer ideas like, sealing leaky air ducts in buildings to weatherizing homes and strengthening building codes. But they say it would still require an upfront investment. McKinsey estimates the nation would need to invest about $500 billion to implement these energy efficiency upgrades. But they say we'd make make back double that, $1.2 trillion in energy savings within 10 years. In other words, about what we spent on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that would be just from efficiency.
And didn't the stimulus money, the recovery package, didn't that put money into some of these very type of upgrades?
Yeah, some funds have already been allocated in the federal stimulus bill to retrofit and weatherize buildings for energy efficiency. Additional funding may arrive in the new clean energy legislation currently on hold in the Senate. Now, it sounds like a great idea, doesn't it, to help fund weatherization, but not according to the National Association of Realtors. The trade group succeeded in removing a provision from the Waxman-Markey clean energy legislation that would have established a voluntary grading system for old buildings to help consumers, buyers, the commercial real estate industry be able to compare buildings side by side for energy efficiency, but the National Association of Realtors didn't like that.
Industry and trade comes first, people and the planet last.
The federal office charged with oversight of surface mining says coal mine operators that use the destructive mining technique of mountaintop removal don't do a very good job of restoring the land after they're finished, even though it's required in their permits and by state law.
Oh, color me shocked. They blow the top off of the mountains. How can they possibly restore that? I mean, they've
leveled
the
mountains.
Well,
this is what happens. Now, many states have similar laws that require mountaintop removal companies to restore what's called the approximate original contour of each mountain. down. But the U.S. Office of Surface Mining studied closed mines in West Virginia and found that those don't even come close. One mountain was 200 feet lower in its elevation, and that was fairly common. The new director of the Federal Office of Surface Mining says they are going to be expanding their studies to other coal states to check and see. Now, the companies don't have to restore the mountaintop if they have plans to develop the land for commercial or residential use afterward, but critics are saying that the reconstituted land is also useless for development and that no development has actually ever occurred.
Well, if you've seen photographs of this, it becomes a moonscape. I mean, they blow the top off the mountains, it becomes a moonscape, and then it leaves this this toxic ash, this sludge that makes its way into our water supply, and it
decimates the communities nearby.
No surprise that they're not restoring it. I don't know how they could, even if they wanted to, and these coal companies don't want to.
We reported earlier this week on a study from the U.S. Department of Defense that concludes climate change will pose a threat to our national security over the next 20 years. Well, now an Australian think tank has released a study also identifying climate change as a long-term internal security threat for Australia. The Australian Strategic Policy Institute warns of increasing stresses on the country's infrastructure and ability to respond to disasters, and that Australians will face more deadly heat waves, wildfires, droughts, and cyclones. Over 500 people died in January and February of this year alone from record heat waves and wildfires in Australia, and the study cites that as evidence that climate change is already altering their weather
now,
patterns.
Now, the report that we talked about earlier this week had been warning of national security implications of global warming. That was, by and large, ignored by the corporate
mainstream
broadcast media.
You bet.
This report as well, this new Australian report, similarly ignored?
Similarly ignored. You'd never know about it if we didn't talk about it.
Heck of a job, corporate broadcast media. Read about that and much more at our blog, greennews.bradblog.com. We'd love your feedback. You can also send us email, greennews@bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeed. Plight of the humble bee. Dear God. Brad Friedman, Desi Doyen, at long last, have you no shame? Flight of the humble bee.
Oh! Oh!
Yeah, okay, I'm jealous. I wish I'd come up with that. You know, I gotta say, I'm really, really proud of Brad and Desi because, you know, they're out there and far, far away from Appalachia. And they've figured out mountaintop removal just like y'all have. They understand it has to end. They understand, as we put forth last week, that green begins in Appalachia. And if the whole country goes green and we don't green Appalachia, there's no green. It's that simple. It's that true. So thanks to Brad and Desi, whose green news report I simply adore, for getting it, for understanding that Appalachia really, really does matter. It's much appreciated. And one of these days, if it's at all possible, I hope that I can figure out some way to get Brad and Desi here, take them up in a plane with the wonderful folks at South Wings, and let them fly over this stuff. Because you can see photographs of it, and it's horrifying enough. But when you see it with the scope that the human eye provides, it changes you. It changes you. And to walk out and see the view from Hell's Gate on Caford Mountain at Larry Gibson's place is one of those moments when you understand that there are some things in life that we cannot wait for other people to work on, that we are, in fact, called. I'm going right back to the phones in just a second here, but I want to share an email I received with you. I got a note from our friend Jude out in Jude of Women's Standing out in the Great Northwest. She wrote earlier this morning. She said, "Morning, Bob. Your Wednesday night program, a repeat from last Friday, was compelling to hear. I had never heard anyone state as you did such an accurate introduction. Are you ready to walk through the swamp tonight? It was a perfect analogy of how we have been required to be disciplined with all of it, and how, on an individual level, are forced to endure each day with all the insanity. It is a swamp, Bob, and the pull of the thick, dank mud requires one to be aware, accurately researched, strong and focused on where one steps. It is not a place for a novice to travel through. Programs such as The Horn and others who speak truth provide maps to assist one's way through this no man's land. Jude says, I love the passion in your belly and the unique perspective you speak from. It is so valuable on many levels. And Jude also sent along a wonderful photo of herself and friends along with Mike Malloy on his recent trip out to the Seattle area. They had Chinese for dinner. And it's a wonderful photo. Just a wonderful photo. I love seeing you all and putting faces with names, and more importantly, faces with voices. So thanks for that, Jude. We will head back to the phones. Let's see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. It's been raining a lot around here today in the past few days, so, you know, bailing out the house, as usual, when it starts to rain, so can't complain too much regarding that. So, see, we were talking about the bees how many years ago now, and we said it was a combination of things back then, so about time they caught up to that, huh?
Yeah, I'm sure that the poison industry is running around Albert saying, oh, wasn't our poison, wasn't ours. It was all of theirs.
Well, exactly. It's not only that, you know, you're going to break it down to the almond farmers and everybody who grows anything that's any fruit and all these guys, and, you know, they'll sit there and say, you know what? We're not using these pesticides because we need the bees more than we need the pesticides. And if we happen to lose a bushel or two of apples, you know, to this or to that, you know, we'll have to look at natural ways to kind of tamper that down. And there's plenty of them. You know, there's plenty of different, you know, natural pesticides and predators, you know. It's all these things that, you know, you don't even need to bother with these chemicals and bother with this coal. And there's so many different opportunities for us to step forward into the future. And I think now that the covers are kind of being pulled back a little bit, you know, we're starting to see, you know, peak coal. My goodness, Bob. My goodness. You know?
I know. And you know, with those coal numbers down, like I mentioned earlier, 42.6%, I think it is. Have your lights been dimming, Albert? Because mine haven't.
No, No, but they keep popping windmills up. And just to kind of address David had mentioned last time you and I spoke, we're talking regarding solar panels. Or it was one of those times. I heard it on a rerun. And I just got to say that, you know, once the demand goes up, the price will go down. Because the supply will go up, because the demand will go up. And it's like, you know, when we sit here and look at a world that, you know, hell, yeah, all right, it's $20 for a 55-gallon drum of pesticide, but that's going to wind up wiping out the pollinators of my crops, and I won't have any crops. You know, the farmer might not decide to use that 20, you know, to spend that money on these pesticides when there's, you know, a million different ways to do something. When we start looking at coal, running out of coal, and we can't even attempt to afford that, what do you think we're going to turn to? We're going to turn to where we need to go. We're going to turn to being sustainable. I just happened to actually, I had to watch it again. I just went and watched Garbage Warrior again. And it was even better this time because there was, you know, you just learn so much just from looking at the buildings that the man's constructing. You know, just sitting there looking at these things and sitting there saying, my God, you learn a book, you sit there, you pound some dirt, you do this, and I can do that. You can sit there and make something where you have no heating bill. You know, if we don't have a heating bill, we don't need that much more electricity. And if we don't need that much more electricity, it's going to sit there and turn everybody to start looking and say, hey, if I don't have to spend $200 a month on my power bill, I can put that towards sending my kids to a specialized school. But, you know, when we sit here and look at the power bills we have, at what it's doing to the environment, what it's doing to our pocketbooks, there's no way we can continue this rampant petrol economy that we've had going for the last 80 years. This stuff can't fly. It's not sustainable. You know, you wait till peak oil. If we thought that $4, $5 a gallon of gasoline back in the day, if we thought that was outrageous, just wait. Just wait. Wait till that reality sets in. You know, it won't even be about cost anymore. You know what I mean? I mean, when it comes to being sustainable, it'll be like there is no cost. It doesn't matter. You know, this is something we have to do. You know, they're sitting there talking global warming as a threat to national security. Well, global warming, where does this pollution come from? It's the way we produce energy, right?
It's the way we produce a lot of stuff.
Exactly.
It's the way we go about producing our bombs, for heaven's sakes.
Well, you know, but we sit there and, you know, yeah, the coal numbers are going down, but it's still 41%. That's a ginormous amount of car. Isn't it the dirtiest fuel that we could use? Anybody's ever played SimCity for 10 minutes knows that. You don't want to start building your city with a coal power plant and have it last 50 years, will you? Because then you'll have pollution in it. Nobody will want to live there. You know, so the damn video game little pixels can figure that out. You don't. I would hope humans can do it. And if we're going to do it, what are we going to want to do? We're going to want to have solar panels on our roofs and windmills on our roofs and all these things. How much can these things wind up really costing once people start producing them? And you're going to see them produced locally because all these factories are in all your little towns are closing down because we don't have, you know, they're not making 6 miles per gallon, you know, sport utility vehicles anymore. They're not going to be sitting here making these worthless, stupid plastic vehicles.
Yeah, Homer Simpson's Canyonero comes to mind.
Exactly. We're not doing that anymore. We're stepping out of that old paradigm. And, you know, and that's why we're, you know, I think, you know, what Brad, you know, we'll see that stuff on mainstream news. I know they were kind of lamenting the fact that, you know, mainstream news doesn't pick up on this stuff. They will. They are. They're hitting it. They're getting there. They're slow. They're really slow. They're ridiculously slow, you know, but look at our state of government. I mean,
that's the thing. It doesn't have to, and maybe that's the point of frustration for a lot of people, Albert. It doesn't have to be as slow as it is.
Absolutely.
If we had a non-dysfunctional government that actually got behind these sorts of things, I mean, the pace would not be as slow as it is. Consider, if you will, that in the painfully inadequate climate bill that is trying to make its way through the wholly dysfunctional United States Senate, there's $60 billion for carbon capture and storage alone. Okay, that's just CCS. That's just that piece of coal welfare. Beyond that, there's hundreds of billions more for corporate carbon welfare.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Compare that to the $1 billion that's in that bill for renewables.
Yeah. Well,
and when you do that, then you see why the pace is so damned glacial.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They're winning, you know, so they get that money and they want to drag it on as long as possible. You know, but that's why all of a sudden, you know, it turns around, and I don't know how much they exaggerate on these things, but now, you know, they're talking, oh, the Chevy Volt will have 230 miles per gallon. 230. It's nice to know when you can put a, when you put a 10 gauge in someone's mouth, they can all of a sudden miraculously, oh, yeah, it'll be out next year, 230 miles per gallon.
Yeah, where's that been?
What the hell happened? That just blows me away. Maybe, you know, and last time we were talking, there was an idiot standing out there with a loaded pistol. Then you go off for your little Netroots meeting, and there's guys showing up with assault rifles to these frickin' meetings.
And, you know, it was informationally difficult up there, not for want of access, but for simply want of time. But, you know, that stuff did make its way across the front end of my radar just long enough for me to go, what? Huh? You know, that photograph of the Moran's back with his assault rifle slung over. What? Huh? Who? And, you know, I'm thinking, because the first thing that comes to mind is this real? Did somebody slip me a link to the Onion again?
Nah, see, the first one, though, the first guy, apparently he was a black guy, and it was a radio prank. But there was two guys there. And then there was another one with another one. Another guy went and did it. So I don't think all three of them were radio show pranks. And the guy even interviewing one of the guys had a sidearm on. I mean, it was just... I mean, blow your little, you know, Dixie horn because you can, I guess, but...
But language moment. Those are not firearms. Remember, they are penis extensions.
Yes, true. Yes.
Because there's nobody. And I mean this in the context of these meetings, Albert. They're penis extensions. Because there's nobody there behind the barricades with the breastworks thrown up, and you know they're gonna whistle Dixie and reenact the Pickett's charge or anything. It's the old gag about what if they gave a war and no one would come. There's no other side there. So when you show up at a town hall meeting, wearing your gun, that gun is serving as a penis extension. Because you are trying to assert your manhood, you're trying to assert your maleness, I don't know. It's like the orangutan show when they show their butts.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine. I mean, if you want somebody to respect you, or wouldn't you? I mean, you're in a crowd of unarmed people. If you're there unarmed yourself, yet you can throw your hands and you know what you're doing in terms of hand-to-hand.
These hands are registered as lethal weapons with the FBI.
What happened to that? I mean, what happened to that? Why do you got to have penis extensions, whatever? These guys, you know, these people are ridiculous. But see, this is what I was talking about earlier. In terms of, you know, there's Dave once again. The doneness comes in epochs. Hopefully we can graduate to the point where, for this epoch, they will be done once a violent act is committed by one of these idiots. However, I see the tide starting to turn back again. Don't you feel it? Don't you see it? You know, and, you know, thank Barney Fife, you know, Barney Frank for sitting there. I was going to call him Fife. You thank Barney, you know, did you hear what he said to that freak?
Oh, yeah, I've got, can we take a moment and just run the audio, because it's so lovely?
Please, I love it. Yeah, absolutely.
This just begs to be run, Barney Frank at his town hall meeting.
Barney Frank of Massachusetts wrapped up a town hall meeting on health care in Dartmouth, Massachusetts. Watch this exchange.
Why do you continue to support a Nazi policy, as Obama has expressly supported this policy? Why are you supporting it?
Let me But I will. When you ask me that question, I am going to revert to my ethnic heritage and answer your question with a question. On what planet do you spend most of your time? Do you want me to answer the question? Yes. If you stand there with a picture of the president, the face to look like Hitler, and compare the effort to increase health care to the Nazis, my answer to you is, as I said before, it is a tribute to the First Amendment that this kind of vile, contemptible nonsense is so freely propagated.
You know, how do we get an award to him for that?
We just give it to him, pin it to his imaginary chest.
And the people around, and see, the important part is that the people around this little wingnut twit start cheering when he starts chewing on her ass.
That's right.
And she's just standing there. I mean, you've seen the video. Her eyes are just... Really, she's the lizard skin was beginning to, you know, the gills behind her ears were beginning to break through the makeup.
We have one that can see. That was just precious, and it's nice. I mean, I don't know if you caught. There's been a lot of counter protesters going to these protests, and they hold up signs with. I'm with stupid, with, you know.
Oh, the power of comedy, Albert.
None of these people know what they're talking about. And I mean, it's just, you know, then you look at their signs, the spell. Now, I know I'm not the biggest genius on the planet, but, you know, at least you would proofread a sign before going out into public with it.
Morons.
Especially when you spell public pubic.
Morons.
Yeah, morons. Exactly. And these are these people, and then they get, you know, they promised us burgers and beer, and we can't get any. It's just, we want our country back. I'm glad to see that meme is starting to take hold, too, in a lot of, you know, talking heads' mouths now. You know, Bill Maher was talking about it. There was a couple other guys talking about it. You know, they always say, I want my country back.
I know. You lost.
You know what that is? It's just racist. It's just,
sure it is.
That's pure racism right there.
Yeah, because you can't say, I want the out of the White House, and America don't need no for a president.
Exactly.
Yeah. And by the way, if you go over to thinkprogress.org, where we got the audio of the folks complaining about not being able to get into the AstroTurf, what are they, fuelers? Fuelers rally. Yeah, I know. But I'm going to leave the commentary for everybody else. Just go over to thinkprogress.org. The title of the post is American Flags Not Welcome at Oil AstroTurf Rally. Watch the little video there and wait for the woman who complains about not getting her free food.
I can see it already.
Oh, you know.
Yeah, oh, I know. Oh, boy, I tell you, you know, and I just can't, I don't know, maybe it's ignorant of my part, what have you, but I can't see people of that mindset winning, especially when we're faced against what we're faced. You know, this is a time of, you know, extreme personal danger. This is not, you know, in terms of immediate, but... Man, we started looking at storms and running out of energy and running out. If we just sat there and did like Idiocracy and waited till buildings, you know, fell towards each other and we tie them up so they don't, you know, fall anymore or whatever the hell they were doing.
Yeah, and take anybody who got hurt to St. God's Memorial Hospital.
Yeah, you know, take them off that off ramp that they never finished building. I mean, it just. You know, it's like there's no way we're standing still anymore. You know, I mean, I remember I used to bring up the imagery of, you know, sitting there, you know, the people are waking up, and I think the people are waking up. I don't think their nonsense is really hitting forth. Yeah, they went out there and their little, you know, they emptied the, and I hate to say it, but it's true, they emptied the trailer parks and the little gated community, you know, freaks that sit there, and they may be unemployed, what have you, at the time, and they've been going to these rallies and these meetings and so on and so forth, but the things they say are so completely out of reality. I mean, I'll tell you, you know, Barney Frank, he's got a mouth on him, but a lot of these guys are, you know, are sitting there saying the same types of stuff to these people. You know, he wasn't the first one. He just, you know, he said it, he ranked her out in a nice way, but, you know, he's not the only one. There's not the, you know, even Feingold was shutting people down left and right when they would bring up these little tiny things. But we didn't have the, you know, the mass that we did, but, you know, and heck, what did I do? The other day I just got a phone call that, you know, the Netroot Democratic movement is starting to counter-protest now. I just got invited to go out to see Ron Kind. I knew he was playing, but I didn't think, I was kind of thinking on going, but, you know, he pisses me off a lot, and I don't know if I could keep him on a few issues, but and I don't want to make him look bad, you know. But, you know, I sit there and I get invited to go, and, you know, they're sitting there putting together that way, you know, a nice little buffer zone of just applause, just going there to just support your, you know, people go, even if you're, you know, don't be worried about their assault rifles. Don't be worried about none of that. They're not going to use it. And if they do, you know, they ain't going to be doing that. They're too scared to do anything like that. They just like having them because they know it instills fear in people. And that's, you know, they live on fear.
Well, let me ask you a question. Speaking of, no, I agree with you. But what's the difference? And I think there is one, Albert, and I think you've probably got the wherewithal to sort it out. What is the difference between showing up at one of these AstroTurf rallies with your semi-automatic rifle slung over your shoulder and showing up with a dynamite belt around your waist? I mean, there's a sort of miniature Cold War escalation going on here. It started with pistols. Now we're at assault rifles. What about a hand grenade? I mean, I don't want to whisper that in the universe's ear and get the unit and somebody show up with one. But really, where the other side, again, my premise, where the other side is totally unarmed, there's no whatever weapon you if you bring a Scottish claymore, it's still the same thing. If you bring a finely honed Italian rapier, it's still the same thing. If you bring Chinese throwing stars, it's still the same thing. You are bringing arms against an unarmed perceived opponent.
Yeah, it's just a game. These guys, they're just playing a dangerous game, you know, and I don't think they really have the gumption to do anything about it, because in reality, nothing that they're really concerned about is really threatened. You know, there's some imagery there and there's some symbolism there, but other than that, they're not standing on solid ground. And this is why, and you know what, this is exactly coins the reason why I didn't want to see, you know, people on the left sitting there, oh, we got a liberal this, we got a Democratic Congress and Senate and President, let's start taking guns. As you were hearing that clarion call for, we don't need to do that, because that'll give these people actual, you know, that'll give them traction under their feet, and that's one nice thing I saw Obama, that's a nice jujitsu, he did a nice sweep of them people, and he said, yeah, that doesn't bother me. Yeah, that guy can stand there all he wants. I don't care. You know, he didn't say, oh, we need to go and take it away. And da, 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 da. You know, he was real.
No, because he had a conversation with the Secret Service, and they said, listen, renegade.
Yeah.
we know who these people are. We know where they are. And if they breathe wrong, we're going to blow them away. So you just stand up there and say, chill the out. I got this. And that's what he did, and because in there, and again, you know, this is one of those, you know, Rick Goodner courtesy phone moments, but these people in their weird twisted little minds have it in their head that Barack Obama is a liberal, and of course, being a liberal, he's supposed to be terrified of guns, okay. And so they're showing up to intimidate the liberals forgetting the fact that when that one right-wing freak marched into the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation, a liberal stood unarmed in front of him and took him down, got killed, and saved about 70 people instead of running from the gun so that the right-wing freak could shoot him in the back.
What a sick bastard. We can't ever forget that. What's that man's name?
I gotta find it. Somebody will send it to me.
Yeah, that's a name we have to have close to the tip of our lips.
Because that man was a hero, and there are lots of other heroes like him out there, because it's the difference, Albert, between right-wingers' perceptions of what it means to be a liberal and what it means to actually be one. Because it takes more courage to be a liberal and to step away and to be willing to step back and challenge and question authority than it ever does to go along with it. And in point of fact, Barack Obama is only a liberal in their fevered imaginations. You know Barack Obama's no liberal. I know Barack Obama's no liberal. It just is what it is, for God's sakes.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, but you're right. The pushback is incredibly valuable here.
Yes, sir.
And, if you get a chance to go somewhere and just stand up and stand your ground a little bit,
mm-hmm.
leave the babies at home. But you'll be, you and many others are proud when they wind up having done that.
Well, I'll tell you another thing, Bob. I won't even leave the babies at home. I just won't. I don't think that they would even have it in them. I know they got some crazies. I know, and I know a lot of them eat way too many microwave meals. But I don't care how many Twinkies these people eat. And I don't want to say it like that, but they're just not. They're just not doing that. They're not going to sit there and start firing weapons and, with my children there at all. No, that's just not going to happen. And the thing is, they need to bring assault rifles, and all they're going to wind up, the thing that's going to crush them is applause. That's right there. The applause of our support there will crush them. They can have all the weapons they want. They're not going to do anything with them. They're not. And if they do anything, really, really stupid, then I guess that's the price. But, don't forget, they're going to pay it more than we will. And I'm not trying to say, if people go out there and martyr yourselves, you don't have to, because they're not going to. The more of us that stand out there and applause and maybe even laugh at them a little bit, they'll cry. They'll go home. At worst case, they'll hurt themselves. And they're not even connected to reality, Bob. But the one thing that they do know is that whole bully thing. And bullies don't stand up very well if the whole school tells them they're a bully. They tend to melt back once, being a bully isn't really cool. And it's just, you're right. It is the harder way to go. It does take more courage to sit there and stand up against authority and to question everything that you're told. That goes without saying. We sit here and looking at a world that where these people, at the very best, they're authoritarian worshipers. They worship authority, and that's what they are. They want to see authority, and when they see that they don't have it, they might throw temper tantrums, but they're not going to do nothing crazy. The Civil War they keep talking about, please, you people, go eat your chili cheese fries and shut up. Hey, the Civil War, my goodness. I can see if they almost had some sort of valid ground underneath their feet, but they don't. They're like that guy at the Kids of the Hall sketch who picks a fight with a guy who's too big, and he runs into his fist and keeps getting up saying, "Oh, you want some more?" It's just not happening. It's not their belt, it's not their shoes. They have nothing underneath them, no traction at all. Everything that they're talking about their biggest policy, initiative. Their biggest talking points are my most paranoid delusions of the Bush years. I mean, and we defeated that. So what are they talking about? These people are just ridiculous. So yeah, I'm not really sweating them, and I'm not sweating, you know, their attempts to throw monkey wrenches into the, you know, to the gears. It's.
And by the way, the name we were searching for was Greg McKendry.
Greg McKendry. You know, that's a. Well, I'm going to try to remember that one.
Greg McKendry. Yes.
Filthy, filthy. There will be those filthy, filthy bastards out there that do stuff like this.
He got the first shotgun blast, and that gave John Bostet, Robert Birdwell, and Terry Uselton, and Jamie Parkey the opportunity to take the guy down.
Awesome.
I tear up when I think about it.
Yeah.
Because I'm still. I had no connection with that church. Except the connection that is implied in when John Donne writes that no man is an island unto himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I tear up thinking about that. Because that's real that's real heroism.
It is, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know how many things those liberals I would agree with on. I don't know. I don't know the people, but, you know, I don't care who they are. Anybody who does that. You know,
greater love hath no man than he would lay down his life for another. Isn't that what it says?
I wish more. You know, those are the Christians that Gandhi was not talking about. And, you know, we need more of those. I don't say we need more people thrown, but we need people like that.
That's the thing, Albert. I think there are millions of them.
You know.
And most of them are never called upon to prove it. They just quietly live it every day of their lives and don't run around with guns slung over their shoulders to public meetings.
Yeah, or scream "Hail Hitler" to Israeli guys saying that they want to see America have health care.
Oh God, that triggered the nausea response.
Yeah, she was filthy. She even had an Israel something shirt on. I couldn't read the whole shirt, but it said Israel on her shirt. So and she's sitting here talking Hail Hitler because he's sitting there talking about how we should. I don't understand. See, that's one of the things. I don't understand. What do you mean we shouldn't have a public health care system? I mean, just the numbers alone. The numbers. Look at what Great Britain pays. They pay 8% of their GDP. We pay 16 point something. Wait, what? And everyone's covered.
Well, that's because there's more of us than there is of them. And, of course, we're also paying for the illegal aliens.
Oh, once again. No.
Yep. Numbers? Numbers? Statistic? No. Can't. No. Oh, God. Albert, it is it's the stuff that madness is made of.
That's what they have. They've got tanks of madness. That's all they've got. And that's what I'm telling you, man. You just wait. Yeah, you know, they're talking, what's his name? Ben Silver, whatever he's talking. You know, if the Democrats smarten up, they won't lose nothing. If they smarten their little butts up and they handle business the way they should be handling business, they won't lose anything in the midterm. You know, or maybe minor here and there. But you know, I think we'll gain more than we lose. You know, as long as we do what's right, and we do.
Well, you know, there's those new polling numbers out there. 77% of the American people still want a public option.
Did you see what they're talking? Now they're going to talk about splitting it up.
Yeah.
Bill, and that might be a good thing. That might be the better way to do it. You know, they were talking. You know, and they talk about these. You know, when they talk about money going into things, and Brad Friedman was sitting there talking about how, you know. You know, they're talking this, you know, institute was talking about, you know, weatherizing houses and insulating and all that other jazz. Well, yeah, some money comes from this bill, and then some money comes from that bill, so maybe that's the way to get it to work, you know. Yeah, you cover a little bit in terms of the insurance-based, you know, reform that needs to go on in this current bill, and then go for a whole public option, you know.
Sure, you mean like a separate bill that, for instance, has a law in it that says, you will no longer reject coverage for, thou shalt no longer reject coverage for pre-existing conditions. And it's just a simple bill that says that, and the insurance industry says, well, what do we get out of the deal? And if we had any spines as Democrats, we would say, you get to continue to exist.
See, that, yeah, I think that would be another thing that, you know, you were talking corruption earlier. And that would be a really nice, that would be a really nice thing to see, where if we could start voting on these issues one by one, not sit there and tie all this crap into one thing that, oh yeah, it didn't go through because it got tied to this bill, it got tied to this, and it got benched and here and there and da 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 da, and now it's dead. You know, that's one of those things about government that really bugs me. I can't stand it. You know, it was actually refreshed in watching Garbage Warrior again, you know, and they're sitting there filibustering over nothing. And, you know, like, that kind of stuff should be criminal. And, you know, that's one thing I can see. There was that one sign in these protests, you know, that I could see is these term limits or something. And something has to go on. And I know that these guys like to have their jobs, but something has to happen to make government move up to speed with the information age, right? I mean, yeah, the post office is getting fast and it's getting good, and yeah, I know it's losing money, but why does everything have to make money too? That's the other thing that blows me away. You know, when they plow the street, you know, just the inherent value of having people not slide off the road and da-da-da-da-da-da, isn't that just worth the cost of maybe, you know, losing money on some salt and plows and gas and stuff like that? No, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy. I don't understand why, you know, everything has to make, you know, oh, 30% profits and 50%. It's a post office. It's a nice service. It's services that we have. You know, this is why we
yeah, because, see, I've got, you know. Yeah, I got a while back, you know, we got the city water a few years back. Mm-hmm. And then we got the city water bill. And then the people who, then the city water was sold off to West Virginia American Water Company, who immediately said, we want you to pay a higher city water bill. And a little bit later, they came back and said, we need more. And we keep saying, why? And they keep saying, well, we're a corporation. We have to pay dividends.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, that whole profit-based model for drinking water isn't working out so well.
That'll run out. I think that paradigm will run out way faster than even the oil paradigm. You know, when we sit here, you know, I mean, there's a bunch of documentaries out there to watch to learn about, you know, what's going on with water. And I think there's one with the Pay at the Pump or one of those. There's one of those, and then there's Flow, which is excellent.
No, Flow
there's a
is.
Bunch of, yeah, there's a bunch of, there's a bunch of, there's even the one with where the El Salvadorans, and I think it was El Salvador, where they actually, when they privatized everything, you know, and they privatized the rainwater, and they privatized, it's like, what are you kidding me? And the people, you know, people, these people don't got nothing. They don't got a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of, and they ain't going to stand for that. We ain't going to stand for it either. And I tell you, you know, this, yeah, that's another thing, this bottled water. Bottled water is convenient, people. It is. Everybody knows that. I mean, it's nice to have some water with you when you're thirsty. Why should I pay, you know, why should you tap water, put it in a bottle, just because you have a tapping machine that makes it feel new, you know, this water is new water. And you know what it is city tap water, and it's $3 a freaking liter. I mean, I had to get, we went canoeing with my kids, and I had some bottled water that they had, you know, because we're out on the river. So, yeah, I did. I purchased a couple. And my daughter started playing with it. I'm like, get out of here. This is more expensive than gasoline. What are you doing? You know, that's one of those things that I don't think a lot of people, oh, my water spilled, oh. You know, you'd certainly think about it if your gasoline spilt. So, and your water costs way more than the gasoline. So, wake up, people! Stop buying all this freaking fancy schmancy water. You know, and I tell you what, I'd love to live in Fiji if it wasn't run by a military dictatorship that does God knows what. That does what military dictatorships do. Don't support. Don't buy Fiji water anymore.
I saw Norwegian bottled water. You know, if it comes from a molten fjord, it's got to be good. And we've got listeners in Norway, and you know, guys, it's time to start writing the letters. Keep your water. No offense. I mean, it's wonderful water, but you're going to want it someday.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Albert, I got to run along, and you've lit the lines up for me, brother, and I do appreciate it.
Oh, hey, great to have you back, Bob. We'll chat later.
All right, take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Sage of Southwest Wisconsin, that's Brother Albert. With any given phone call with Albert's good for about, oh, what, a million good ideas per show? Bottled water. Ouch. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, So I hear you tore the house down at the Net Roots thing.
We tried. We tried.
You got invited back or something? Is that what?
Yeah, the horn has been invited back, and that just blew me away.
And so what? I mean, you know, for the DAs out there, including myself, what does that mean for you? I mean, do they front you some cash, or they pay your way? What happened?
They were kind enough to provide the hotel space, which alone would have been prohibitive.
Okay, so but I mean, next time is the same sort of deal?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, that's good. You know, because I know that those sort of events aren't cheap.
Oh no, they're not, and nothing surrounding them is either.
Right, all the eating and the sleeping. Yeah, I hear you.
And well, and the walking across the street for the $8 pack of cigarettes.
Well, you know what you need to do about that.
I got a year to get up close and personal with the cold turkey because I figured they're about $15 a pack in Vegas.
God, I mean, I didn't. Wow. It's been. I mean, because I stopped.
Well, I didn't. Bear in mind, I didn't buy them. I just, you know, I was in and I looked up and they had the. And I went, holy crap! I'm glad I brought mine from home.
Wow, I mean, because I actually stopped 3 years ago, and they were like five. They're going to eight now.
In downtown Pittsburgh, apparently, where you know where they're the little convenience store across from the Westin is the only game in town.
God, that's a bitch of a habit to stop. Oh my God.
Tell me about it.
I mean, I have sympathy. You know, like I said, I'm not one of those horrible Nazi non-smokers because I've been there, and it's a wicked habit. But anyway, that price will do it for you, though. Eventually.
Yeah, the economics does kick in at some point.
Yeah, I mean, because I even went the route where I put the amount every day that I would spend. You'd be surprised. It actually does make a difference when you look at that jar. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Oh, and you know, I haven't even told the Bob's Adventures in Pittsburgh stories yet. There really should be a notice at the front desk of the hotel. And the Westin was a lovely facility, very green. But there should be a notice at the front desk that says, "Notice to all people who want a 6-pack of beer at 1 a.m." Because that's about when we stopped working. You know, then you want to relax a little bit.
You want to wind down.
Yeah, and they've closed the hotel bar. And Pennsylvania is one of these bizarre places, Sandra. I mean, you know, I thought Alabama and Mississippi and maybe West Virginia had bizarre liquor laws. You know, when you can buy, what you can buy, how, where. Yeah. In Pittsburgh, you can't go to the local Rippy Mart and get a 6-pack. You just can't. You have to go to something they like to call a distributor.
Oh, right. So they have sort of like, almost like state liquor stores there, huh?
Almost. But you can buy a 6-pack to carry out in a bar. So, long night of work.
Oh, God.
You wrap up, and you think, I'd like a beer. And so you ask the concierge, you know, where's the nearest, you know, where can I, oh, you'll have to buy that in a bar. Well, okay, is there a bar open that'll, yeah, straight down Liberty Avenue here, not quite a block. Okie dokie.
And so, yeah, you have to do all that.
And that's how Bob walked into a gay bar he didn't know was a gay bar.
Oh, no, what was that?
While wearing a pink polo shirt.
Ew, that was like, come here.
Yeah, it's getting funner and funner, isn't it?
That's like, come hither.
You know, fortunately, I've been educated, and I'm non-threatened, non-homophobic and everything. And the minute I heard, you know, and God bless Peter Godbold, because the minute I heard 133 beats per minute music coming at me, I knew where I was.
That's a good one. And did you get your drink there?
I got a 6-pack of beer and left, but not before a young man who was wearing very little save for something that resembled a Speedo came around selling shots of liquor, and I said, well, son, I'll be happy to buy one from you if it helps you get your clothes back.
Nice. I'm sure he...
He laughed real good.
Sound amusing. Yeah, I know. Oh, listen, anyway, the only reason I called, did you see all of a sudden now Pelosi is saying, oh, we're not passing any sort of bill without a public option in it?
Yeah, I did, and I don't...
It's either bait and switch, or that trial balloon blew up in their face, and they now know that they can't come up with something without some public option or some government-sponsored means for people to, who are desperate to get some health care. I mean, this
when you look at numbers like 77%, Sandra, and you're Nancy Pelosi, and you're really enjoying your Democratic majority in the House and the perks that come with being the Speaker, and you'd like to hang on to that even if you're not doing much with it, you look up and you kind of go, wait a minute, not doing something could cost us everything we have.
Well, no, that's what I mean. And it's interesting that these people, they're so stupid that they seem to think that they could come up with, quote, reform without something as drastic as either single payer or this sort of weak-ass public option. They don't even want to offer that. And they would pay. They would pay a price, I believe that, because all that gibberish at the town hall meetings, that don't mean nothing. It's desperate. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and it's the ones who aren't making a racket are the ones you have to be careful of if you're a politician, because, you know, those weirdos showing up at the town halls that are being held by Democrats, they were never going to vote for the Democrat in the first place.
Well, no, exactly. And then but what I mean is for the Beltway to be so influenced by that just shows how stupid they are. And these poll numbers, it just shows that people are sort of seeing through the BS because they're sick of going bankrupt. And like I told Guy, they don't want to pay $22,000 a year in premiums coming up.
Yeah, no kidding that.
That freaked me out, that report. I'm like, you know, what planet? Who has that kind of money, employer or worker, to even possibly remotely pay that?
And what would it, you know, what would it do to the economy? You know, we keep hearing, well, it's 1/7 of the economy. At that rate, then it becomes, you know.
Half.
Yeah.
No, I mean, this is what's going on. You're looking at costs being driven by these people who need to make a profit to the point where more and more people won't be able to afford it, and your 50 million uninsured becomes 100 million. That's when you lose power. It's a pretty easy formula.
Well, it is, and I do think you're right, Sandra. I think the light has gone on for some people.
Yeah, no. When I heard that gibberish over the weekend from Obama, the sliver, and all this crap, I'm like, you know what? You're an idiot because people voted your ass in for this. All the rest of it, be damned. This is a bread and butter issue that anybody with some sense can say, well, listen, I don't want to die. Can I have health care?
And as much as I know it drives you crazy, as it does me, maybe there is some of that chess Obama won Kenobi in this, because he can legitimately say, I've reached across the aisle. I have done my bipartisan best. I've tried. And so now they're talking, at least in the Senate, about using budget reconciliation to get it through on a simple majority vote.
No, but if they can get past the fantasy they've spun for the idiots out there who think they have to have 60, 70, or 80 senators vote for it, when did that narrative take hold? That is such a load.
Well, that's the narrative that was crafted by the Republican Party.
Well, no, but, you know, it's like it's just incredible. I'm tongue-tied because I'm so angry at the idea that the Democrats are either lying to us to use them as cover for not doing anything, or they really don't know how to play politics, or they're totally captive by the corporate interests. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think it's probably a combination of all three, Sandra.
You know, I mean, so, but it's funny to see, because, like, I'm already disturbed that Obama, he doesn't seem to practice the kind of politics that, you know, you and I are used to, Johnson, FDR, you know, some backhanded, hard-ass shit, you know? Fuck the dumb stuff.
Yeah.
Up there talking, you know, I'm over it.
Well, you know, the thing is, after you've smacked the bully the first time, the bully understands that you'll smack a second. And right now, that first punch hasn't been thrown.
Well, that queen telling that dead-eye Nazi, I was laughing. I couldn't believe Frank did that. That was hilarious.
Oh, it was
hilarious.
And what came after the line where he said, "And arguing with you It would be like trying to have a conversation with, trying to have a conversation with you would be like arguing with a dining room table. I have no interest in doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was just funny. And the thing is, and because he's some old queen, you know, he could have went off. So she ought to be grateful. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, she got off light.
Because that old queen, he bitchy anyway in the best of days. So she picked the wrong Congress.
Oh, I think Barney Frank's probably cranky or ordering orange juice.
Exactly. So, you know, I think he was. But the fact, how you see how that woman looked, though, that's what scared me.
Oh yeah, yeah, she was dead-eyed Nazi. That's you got it spot on. Because, you know, Barney Frank was right. You know, what planet do you spend most of your time on? Because her eyes just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and she couldn't believe that one of them liberals was talking back at her.
Well, no, exactly, and you know, it's just sort of. It's sort of what is taking so long, you know, because these people, they don't even know what the hell they're talking about, you know, and they're dominating the conversation because I guess the for-profit media wants it that way. But I think the public is people are scared out there. You know what I mean? I know I am.
Well, how, and you know what, it's not just people, you know, like you and me. Who want some better out of government. There are people out there who have for-profit health insurance that may be more terrified than you and I are, Sandra. Because they stand at the brink of ruin.
Yeah, and I think that, just the numbers in itself of the cost is has to be a factor, you know? I mean, I was looking at some other news today where the unemployment thing is ticking up. You know, everyone's all sort of, oh, my goodness, you know, it's still going up. It's like, yeah, you dumbass, what do you think is going on? And foreclosures are going up, and housing prices are still falling. It's like, yeah, wake up, hello, you know? It's sick. You know, when these unemployment numbers come out again, I have a feeling we're going to be...
You mean the revision?
No, August. I think it's going to be another bloodbath, you know?
And the thing is, the question that you have to ask, or at least I do, where the hell's the bottom, Sandra?
Well, this is the thing, and it looks...
How many more jobs do we have to lose?
No, I heard, I think it was Mark Faber, this, you know, economist was saying that the numbers of jobs are from 1990. So we've lost a decade of jobs. I mean, can you even wrap your head around that? We've lost a decade of jobs, yet we still have the population increase. Those jobs aren't coming back.
No, because the for-profit media are so enamored with horse races, all you hear is, well, you know, the economy lost 240,000 jobs last month. What you don't hear so much is where those jobs were, what those jobs were, where they went, and what you just said, most importantly, they're not coming back.
Well, not only that, but we're also operating in that fake, you know, death birth model and all the sort of jiggering they did. So the real numbers apparently are more like 18 to 20%. So you're looking at 1 in 5 now.
Yeah.
And so 20%, this is sort of depression numbers, but in the depression, people weren't so much in debt. So I don't know what you call this.
I think it's,
you know,
I don't know if we're going to be allowed to find it out, but I think it's worse.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I think that it's just, you know, it's not good.
I mean, I met a lot of amazing people with a lot of brilliant ideas. The exhibition hall at Netroots Nation was just one good idea after another. I met some of my heroes from Media Matters, and just thanked them profusely and told them to take back my enduring thanks to whoever the poor soul is that sits there and literally listens word by word every day to 3 hours of Rush Limbaugh.
Hey, Debbie.
Oh, man. But, you know, organizations that are talking about water issues, organizations that are actually talking about manufacturing issues, because I realize that maybe in some liberal circles it's not chic to talk about the industry and manufacturing, but you do have to have it. And we can have it in ways that don't create the old Pittsburghs of our distant memory, where a city is shrouded in black coal filth laden air. The manufacturing techniques are being improved upon every day. They're just not being improved upon that much here.
Well, yeah, but you cannot rebuild without having a discussion about manufacturing, no matter how unsexy the conversation is, you know. But the financial sector is, for all intents and purposes, doomed. I mean, it's not going to come back. And the other thing about that, did you hear about the FDIC? It's broke.
Yeah, it got broke.
Well, I'm saying, you know, this is which explains why they're not shutting down more banks that are teetering. So I'd be curious to see how that's all going to shake out.
You know, we are one good push away from the precipice, I'm afraid, Sandra.
Well, you know, but I'm glad to see that the pushback is sort of turning some heads. You know, I have to end it on an up note, because otherwise I know I'm just totally depressed. But I am glad to see that with Nancy and those other idiots saying, we will do a public, you know.
Yeah, because, look, will of the people, election year next year, might want to do something.
Yeah, so anyway, but glad.
But it is a roller coaster, and I'm so tickled to be back, Sandra, and it's wonderful to talk to you. I know you think I'm probably either lying or crazy, but I go to these places with you guys in my thoughts.
Oh no, I'm happy to hear that you're having success there. Anyway, okay, well, have a good evening.
All right, you take care, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. From California, that's Sandra, who I think has more economic knowledge in her little fingernail than I will ever have in my entire being. And for that, I am intensely grateful. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening and welcome back to West Virginia.
Well, thank you very much, David.
I was catching what Albert was saying about winning. And to me, again, this is something that a lot of the... a lot of progressives that I talk with, they suffer from. You're always going to be in the fight. Whatever anyone tells you, people, you're always going to be in the fight. So think of it this way. A lot of the times you're going to be on defense, and sometimes if you're lucky and God's handed you a gift or whoever, the spaghetti monster, you're going to be on the offense. And that's the way you have to look at it. There is no forever. Forever, people, forever you will be battling this. And you have to teach your kids that. And you have to teach your families that. There's no moment of enlightenment, no tower of enlightenment, no moment of greatness that's going to come down from the sky and kiss you. No. That's not the way the world works. And you know that, Bob, and I know that, Bob, but a lot of progressives, they lead a lot of people off into the wrong track, and their momentum starts to slow down. And their interest starts to go down, and they say, well, it's because we're winning. And then you try to explain to them, no, that was just one instance. I mean, it's a relentless pace. I'm sorry to break that to people who are listening, who just tuned in. But no winning, none. Offense and defense. Stay with the program. That's all.
Well, I don't think that's an unfair assessment, David, because there's no winning because the other side never surrenders.
That's also too. It's also a war of perception. And perception, you never. There is no side that declares a loser. There's a perception of Christianity. There's a perception of the Ixanu. There's a perception of Hindu. We're in the same boat. And I'll tell you something. I don't mean to depress people, but the more people we have, the more people it's likely that are going to go down the wrong, treacherous path that make us slap our forehead. That's the facts. That's how nature works. That's the probability. That's.
But also, David, politics exists on a linear scale, if you will, or at least that's the way it's frequently represented, mm-hmm. where you know, some people are going to be more to the left than others. Some people attempt to define themselves as centrist, and it's a constant dynamic tension between the right and the left. As to where the center is, because the center is not static. The center is always in motion. And right now we live in a country where the Republican Party, over the course of, Jesus, a generation, dragged the center way over to, attempted, I won't give that they did, but attempted to drag the center to the right so that it appears that the struggle among liberals is harder than it actually is. And I think that the one group that probably doesn't understand that most of all is the Congress. Because it's not what is being asked for by extraordinary workaday Americans is not radical. You know, we want health care coverage.
I agree with you, Bob, and I think the problem is that a lot of people still don't understand is when it comes to the infrastructure and how far the right wing has gotten and how fast they continue to build and how slow of an uptick this is going to be just for the progressives and people on the left. You are in for the fight of your lives, your children's lives, your children's children's lives. I mean, keep going, people, because it's going to be constant. It's not going to stop. I mean, and that's the problem, Bob. That's what I hear. A lot of people, I go on blogs and stuff, and they'll say, oh, but now we've got it. We've got this one now. Obama's going to give us a public option. You know, not to be cynical on the public option thing, but if they do put the public option on the table, chances are people aren't going to be able to afford it because everyone's going to be broke.
Well, I hope it doesn't turn out that way, but that possibility certainly exists. You know what you're describing in a very few well-chosen words is something that is confronted in the activist community on a daily basis, and that is there is a constant drive to go, 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 do, 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 to the point of exhaustion. And what we need in the course of all of that, perhaps, is some teaching on how to take care of oneself within that context. Because if you grind yourself to a nub, you haven't done the effort to correct whatever it is you're trying to correct any good. Instead, you got eaten alive by it. And there's a whole element of live to fight another day in this that a lot of people, you know, the people who get burned out,
right,
have not addressed. I mean, and this is not me crawling up on the cross because I understand we all need the wood.
Yeah.
But I learned that in the last week and a half. I'm not kidding when I say that we put in 20-hour days. And it was just mind-numbing exhaustion.
I want to give people a bit of a realization. I was reading a blog. I was reading a post on a message board that I frequent, and it's a popular conspiracy-related site. But they do a lot of critical thinking on there as well, and they counter and debunk a lot of conspiracies. Anyways, one of the things they said was they got one of those invitations to go to Washington D.C. Bob, you're going to love this. They went to Washington, D.C., and they realized exactly how it works down there in terms of why they went down there. Well, they were pushed into room after room after room, and they finally got to talk to one of the aides, and they said, they looked around in the cafeteria, and they had that moment of revelation. They said, wow, so look at all the people in here. And they say, he goes, but I don't see any congressmen. He's like, he goes, yeah, these are all lobbyists. This whole cafeteria, 80%? He goes, there must be 80% all lobbyists. He's like, yeah, I know. He goes, how do you guys ever get anything done? He goes, we don't. And then he said, and then he turned to him and he said, he goes, with all of these people and everyone fighting for a left or right position, and you have all these lobbyists in place, how is anybody going to get anything accomplished? Then he turns to him and then he says, you won't. He goes, you know how people always talk about conspiracies of business and the corporation's already taken over? He goes, well, it's not a conspiracy anymore. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people, Bob, they don't understand that. It's not getting through to them in terms of where we're at this point. And that's why I always stress that we're all going to be on the defense forever. And you know, and you might,
because there are always barbarians at the gates.
yes, there's always barbarians at the gate. There's always zombies at the gate. Use whatever you want. You want to say, you want to take it back to the 80s? We'll take it back to the 80s. There's always killer tomatoes at the gate.
Only you.
They're going to, listen. Let me tell you something. I just sent you, I want people to understand this. I told this to Guy James, too. Look, when Albert was talking, see, this is the other thing that a lot of people don't understand. When Albert was talking about they don't want to do anything, they're not going to do anything with those guns, that's not the point. The point is this. The point is to dismantle any momentum that Obama has in the news. This is the first wave, people. I want people to understand that. This is the first wave. This is the first real wave we've seen. The teabaggers, as Tom Hartman was saying, was the trial run for this. You are going to expect wave after wave after wave, and it's only going to get worse. Let me point this out. If you think what you're seeing now is going to be a less of a push, you better get that out of your head. I saw something on CNBC, for Christ's sake. CNBC and Gerald Celente, this guy who hawks gold, said, I predict an American revolution. He predicts, and the surrealness of it, though, Bob, was the program is called Happy Hour. I don't know if you've seen this shit.
No.
But holy cow, Bob. It's a Wall Street program where it's called Happy Hour, and they sit at a damn bar. But, you know, the bar is a prop, and the people in the background are the prop. So we're in La La Land now, Bob. And they're talking about the aspect of, I see another American Revolution on the horizon. People are really fed up, and that's what's happening. They're drumming it up. And now on the other side, if you think the hate is strong now, Bob, look at the video that I sent you on this Pastor Manning guy. This video is on every – Tom Harmon profiled this on his show this week. This video is on every single damn gun site in the world on their front page. I think it's on, even at the NRA. And this is the guy who calls Obama a long-legged Mac Daddy. And he's a black preacher, people. So when he puts that – and this is the crazy thing, Bob. And when he put out, he said, Tom was playing little clips. He said, and I want you to know something. He was talking in his preacher voice. You know that when the revolution comes, I'm going to be on the white side. I'm going to be with the white folks.
And you're getting it out there early, is he?
Well, he might be.
Well, I've got it here. Let's check out. I don't know how far
right,
in the fun
right,
stuff is. But
people, listen to this right now.
Either there's going to be a revolution, Patrick Henry style in America, where red-blooded, God-fearing, Jesus-loving Americans are going to stand up and say, we're not going to take it no more. We're just not going to take it. And there's going to be riots in the streets, worse than the riots in South Central Los Angeles after they acquitted the cops that beat up Rodney King. You think that you, and that was black people rioting. You haven't seen anything. And I'm not advocating killing and murder and stealing and robbing. That's not what I'm advocating. I'm just telling you what people are going to do. People are sick of this. People are tired of the long-legged Mac Daddy, you know, kicking them in the face every time he gets up lying to them. Then you got a bunch of, I don't know, suck-ups like the MSNBC News, ABC News, all these media types, and everybody who's looking to be popular and get invited to the White House, sucking up to him all the time. It's sickening. I mean, it's downright sickening to watch this. You know, you can get these white folk all riled up here. I'm going to tell you something. They're going to come in, the white folk get riled up. You know, members of the NRA going to come into the black neighborhoods. I'm telling you. You know, the people just tired of this. White people are being pushed around, kicked to the curb, having their rights denied, being...
Say what?
This isn't... I want people to know this. This isn't like every right-winger's mailbox. Millions and millions of hits. Whoever put this out did a well-coordinated hit on the Internet, and they executed it brilliantly. That's the problem. A lot of people don't understand how these email campaigns work and how fast they go. And when you have someone like this drumming up that kind of fear.
But the content, David, for God's sakes, the content. White people been kicked to the curb, long-legged Mac Daddy kicking Whitey in the face. What? Where? How? When? I mean, I'm plugged in. I mean, I've been out of it for a week or so, but
yeah.
I missed it.
Wait. But at the end of the video, I want people to understand this. This guy starts singing. Oh, yes, he starts singing. And he starts talking about how Obama, you think this is bad. What did we say, Bob? We said it was only going to get uglier and uglier and uglier. There's no turnaround, people. It's going to get uglier and darker in this administration. And he says, he starts singing about Larry Sinclair and Obama having a homosexual affair in the back of a limo. I'm not making it up.
Oh,
how can I make that up?
My God.
How could I make that up? And that's my point, Bob. That's my point. Offense, defense, you're always going to be there. Get used to it. Nobody's sitting down. There are minimum breaks. That's it. And we're probably going to lose more. I hate to be cynical, but we're probably going to lose more in this country. But what do you want me to tell you? That's the reality, and that's what we face.
And let's put it in context and perspective, David.
Yeah.
That is the American story. For every human being that has ever wanted to make the country better, for every human being that has ever wanted to do good, there have been arrayed against them in their time small or large armies of people who wanted to go backwards, who wanted to make it worse. Even in their own worst interests. I mean, dear God, look at the Civil War. The Civil War on the South side was not fought by a bunch of slave owners. It was fought by poor whites who came pouring out of the hills and off of the plains and up out of the river valleys who were struggling to survive in their own right. And those were the ones who were mown down like summer wheat. At Pickett's charge in Gettysburg, while General Pickett stood back there in the rear with his oiled locks, the white patrician that he was. Those people are always there. As Jeff Biggers pointed out so brilliantly in the United States of Appalachia and alluded to in the panel in Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
the abolitionist movement was born with dire threats against it. It was born in places like Chattanooga, for heaven's sakes. And the American Revolution was fought against tremendous odds. You know, women's suffrage, women were beaten and jailed. You know, then and within recent living memory, the civil rights movement, young people buried in earthen dams in Mississippi.
You know, Bob, we need to get out of that conditioning. And when people tell me about a brighter future and there's going to be a brighter future and we're going to run on cars powered by happiness, that's great and all. But the point is the fact that we really need to teach everyone. We need to teach everyone that we need to make do with what we have, and also understand that there might be times that are going to be leaner. And talk about that, and get back to some rational sense when it comes to with this country and how we progress as a nation. But I just want to leave it on this note, not to give people a total downer. But I just want people to know, whatever you're going through, this is the ember of optimism or brightness that you can see. Whatever you're going through, always realize there's going to be someone in this country that you can probably reach out to and is going through the same thing. And you can find a bond. You can find a support system.
And you draw and you beat back the isolation. Exactly.
Right, you beat back the isolation. And just realize what your forefathers and your generations of your ancestors went through. And I know this may sound cliche, but you haven't even been there yet, people. We haven't been there yet. I haven't been there yet. Not looking.
I know precisely what you're saying. And by the way, Sandra just shot me an email, David.
Yeah.
She says, Pastor Manning's been doing this since before 2008. We liberals are way late.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe that's just his personal message that, you know, I'm one you can trust. Yeah. Oi, to the white people. Eesh.
Oh, by the way, you got to check out the trailer for Avatars just came out. It's pretty impressive.
Oh, cool.
Cameron's new film.
I will go and look. Yeah, because I've read a little bit about that. It does sound interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
All right.
All right, Bob. It was nice talking to you.
Good talking to you, David. Take care.
All right, later.
Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. And rolling along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing, man? It's Gary.
Hey, Gary. How are you?
Okay. Good, man. Glad to hear that you went out to the Netroots thing and had a really good time and made some good contacts.
I met amazing people. And turned a lot of people on, I hope, to what we're doing here with the Horn.
Great. Sounds good. Yeah, I wasn't going to call in tonight. I've been kind of like, I usually don't call in, so I feel like I really need to call in. But
right, when the spirit moves you.
Yeah, I think, I'm going to go back, what I was talking about during the campaign season, because I kind of hear on the left a lot of the same stuff I heard, during the campaign, when we start losing a little optimism and we get a little infighting and all this other kind of stuff. You know, I was actually down at the DNC today for the meeting. I actually didn't go inside because they only had a few people. But we were out there, with protesting and not protesting, but supporting the public option, I would say.
Yeah.
And I got in a conversation with a couple people, and particularly, a couple of younger white males, and I'll put that white male thing out there as a preference. And they were saying, well, you know. Obama's weak, he needs to really get strong and blah, 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 this and that, he's letting the right wing push him around, and, the whole thing, he's getting swift boat and everything else. And, I just want to say to people about Obama, I'm not here to promote him or any way, I look at him just like a lot of other politicians, but I do grade him a little bit, obviously a little bit, a grade above. Barack Obama's probably one of the bravest men I've seen in my lifetime. And I'm going to say this, I can say this personally, as a black man, I have a perspective that some people don't have.
Mm-hmm.
People don't understand what Barack Obama... I mean, are people really looking at the ugliness in America, the racism that's out there, the fear, the threats on his life? Do we really know the thoughts that he has as a black man? Barack Obama's a very brave person, and he's very smart and intelligent. People need to kind of remind themselves of that. We have to always kind of step back and say, wait a minute. I mean, the racism and fear are just so bad.
He is as hated, he is as hated, Gary, or worse than, and I'm trying to think, than the right hated John Kennedy or the South hated Abraham Lincoln.
Exactly. And think about this, people, to those who are listening. Hey, Colin Powell's wife. And Colin Powell was scared to run himself as a conservative because he knows what was out there. And this is a guy who's been in the war, who's seen the ugly of war. And he said, hell no.
He didn't want that.
Exactly. Barack Obama is a very brave man. And there's no right wing, nothing that they're going to do at this point is going to scare him because of health care. He is not a president of the United States, something that was inconceivable. A couple years ago,
and remains inconceivable to a significant portion of the country. That crowd that keeps hollering, "I want my country back."
Exactly, and if people think that somehow he's going to fall off on this and weaken out because of this public option, yada yada yada, this is my personal opinion. You're on crack. Barack Obama is playing chess right now. Some caller called on Mike Malloy's show last night and pretty much said what I've been thinking for a long time. Laid it out exactly what he's doing, and he's right. He's just exposing your enemy to the fullest, so these blue dog Democrats don't have no left card to play. They won't have a card left to play because the Republicans have already shown they are going to destroy anything. So what are the blue dogs going to be bringing to the table? Nothing. They're not going to be bringing anything. So basically, if they can't bring anything, then they can be moved because they have to stand for something. They can't just, you know what I'm saying, Bob? They have to have something in their hand. The same thing with Grassley and everybody else. If not, if they don't have anything, you can eventually convince them to move to your side. I'm not saying that he can do that with Republicans, but look at Johnson. I remember what something Bill Murray said about Lyndon Johnson. He was making this thing. He said the way Johnson always moved and twisted arms was he always appealed to the senators or the people who were trying to move their moral. He said he always got them in the room and eventually got them on their moral and said, and you know, when you get to a man's moral core and question his moral core, that's a very personal thing. And that's what Obama is slowly moving toward, that moral core. Now, some people may disagree with this, but this is what I think he's doing. And when I saw him speak today at the small forum, or basically meeting, you know, he basically said, look, everybody, you said the same thing during the campaign when Sarah Palin, you know, yada, 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 during, you know, and here media was like, oh, you're sinking in the polls and all this other stuff. Sarah Palin had a high burn rate. And I said this, you know, last time when I called in. She has a high burn rate. And all these town hall meetings with Republicans jumping off at the mouth, they're just burning themselves out. Right now is not the time to be worried about anything. I'll be more worried in September. That's when everything goes down. Right now, we're just arguing about smoke.
So you're saying it is rope-a-dope?
Oh, it damn sure is rope-a-dope. It ain't even...
He's letting them punch themselves.
Rope-a-dope.
Well, let me add perhaps this little touch of nuance, if I may, Gary. I think this is all also informed by the kind of politician, and I say this without respect to race or ethnicity, by the kind of politician and the kind of politics that Barack Obama espouses. And his politics, from everything that I know of his history, has always been consensus-based. That has always been the direction in which he tried to move. And we are certainly seeing that in his actions thus far on health care. I will also add that being a Democrat, historically, where the presidency is concerned, Democrats are willing to share the co-equal power that is granted under the Constitution to the three branches of government, whereas Republicans in the presidency always seek to advance the executive branch over the other two branches. And I think those two things explain a lot of what Barack Obama is doing right now. And in addition, he is doing some of what you describe.
I think that even if he's not doing it, the way the country and everything, just like the election, everything is moving that way anyway. In other words, some things are beyond just politics and beyond the control of the people in play, even ourselves and our lives or whatever. I mean, people are having babies, demographics are changing. You understand what I'm saying? Some things are just changing, and that's why people are freaking out. They realize that eventually this country is moving in another direction, whether they like it or not. They can go out and shoot a gun, take out a president here or there. They're not going to change what this country is eventually going toward. Single-payer health care. It's going to happen within 20 years. We all know it. The long-term forecast for the CBO has already started working on that because that's where the country is going. We cannot have a private insurance system. It's going to drive the country into the ground. I mean, so that's what I'm saying. We're all arguing about smoke and... It's just, to me, it's like these news heads, it's this daily news cycle. It's like, you know, people got to kind of like calm down a little bit and not let Chris Matthews, Rachel Maddow, Glenn Beck, and all these other people drive the narrative. They don't drive the narrative to me, you know. And, you know what I'm saying? I mean, sometimes I just feel like they're driving the narrative and you know, it starts to get a little out of hand. And I think we all just need to take a break, maybe go on vacation. You know, take a week off or something, off the TV or whatever, and just come back when it's time for the health care to happen. Because another thing people don't realize, this health care actually doesn't go into effect until 2013. So we can't wait.
Well, that's one of the crazier making parts of this whole thing is that it took 11 months to get Medicare up and running from the moment it was signed till the moment that the first benefits went out. The idea that this takes till 2013 is really bothersome.
Yeah, and that's what people are not talking about, because when you put that on the table, then that gives the Democrats, Barack Obama, saying more reason why we have to do it now. See, that's what people are not looking broad term. See, Barack Obama's always looking long term. And I'm not saying him, but I'm just saying in general. He always has this long view. And even, you know, sometimes Chris and them talk about it. They don't run at the same daily cycle. I mean, they're running.
Well, and that's part of that. Yeah, that's part of that chess mentality. If you're a good chess player, you're playing five moves out on the board. And
now, I will say this. I think he has made some mistakes, though. I think, to me, I've always thought, I never liked Rahm Emanuel. I don't like the Blue Dogs. I think that he, you know, I think how the way they did Howard, Durant, you know, Howard Dean and pushed him out of there, I just think that was just wrong because, I mean, he wouldn't have got elected if it wasn't really for, you know, Howard Dean. I think this whole Blue Dog strategy with Robert Emanuel, obviously, we see now is causing problems. Had they had that bill signed on August 1st, you know, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now because...
Well, that's obvious. Yeah, obviously true. So...
So there's the, I think the one, if I was to criticize him, that would be the mistake that I'm concerned about is Rahm Emanuel. And at some point, he's going to have to just say, look, either these Blue Dogs get on with it, or we do some reconciliation,
yeah.
The problem with that, though, is that they have to go in and rewrite some of the laws on it, because I think from what I haven't read a lot of on it, but from what I'm starting to understand from it, because there's a finance to it, you can't do that with financial matters in terms of budget forecast and stuff. You can only do that with there's some kind of legal niche in it. I've heard, you know, I've heard people talking about that. So it seems like they may have to, but you know, we control the Congress, so we can rewrite.
as long as the Congress that we think we control is willing to participate, and that's what I, you know, I've said that to a number of people, Gary. You cannot hang all of this on Obama's doorstep, or drop it on his doorstep, because Congress has ownership of a lot of this mess as it currently exists. You know, the fact that Max Baucus has sat there and dragged his feet and won't even let something as relatively innocuous as the public option be included has got, you know, that's what has Barack Obama in the hole that he's in.
Yeah.
If he's in a hole.
Well, the other thing is Rahm Emanuel coming out, you know, telling some of the groups, you know, because I gave some money to this group that was running some ads against Bill Nelson, and he's come out and tells the progressive groups don't run ads against Democrats. I'm like, who the hell are you to tell, you know? I'll tell that same thing with Barack Obama. You don't tell me who, if I don't like, you know what I'm saying? You're violating my right.
Well, yeah, you gotta understand that where Rahm Emanuel is coming from on that is he is basically espousing a Democratic version of the so-called Reagan's 11th commandment, thou shalt not criticize a fellow Republican. And they are very good at that, Gary, at following Reagan's 11th commandment. Democrats being Democrats, we're a different bird in the first place, and we do tend to critique our own.
Well, I tell you
and
what,
I personally think it's healthy.
Health care, you think it's healthy? You saying, what, you mean you think it's healthy that we criticize our own?
Yeah. Because I don't think.
Do too.
Yeah, I don't. And frankly, I don't think running an ad telling somebody in a politician's district to call his office and tell him you want a public option and you want it yesterday, that's not running an ad against that politician. That is an attempt to create constituent dialogue with the elected representative. Running an ad against someone is running an ad that says, tell him you'll never vote for him again as long as you live, and you'll campaign for the other side. That's running an ad against someone. You know, I think Rahm Emanuel's definition of criticism and what constitutes an ad run against someone is more than a little bit skewed.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, see, I'd be first to come out and jump on Barack Obama if he signaled that. But see, I got kind of mixed signals because I heard kind of like, you know, Dave Axelrod Axelrod, I think, to me, is more my kind of guy. But even though I know he has some ties and everybody says he has corporate ties and all this stuff, but every time I see him come out against things, you know, like you said, you know, keep an eye on Tim Geithner, you know, he seems like to be, to me, on the side where I'm at. And the same thing with this whole thing about Democrats, you know, he seems to be a little bit more flexible and saying, hey, you know what, these Democrats aren't on board, then, you know, where Robert Manuel seems to be like this protectionist, which I'm kind of surprised. I thought he wasn't like that. So I'm like, you know, him or Barack Obama do not have the right to any Democrat how to vote within our party. We vote how we please. I think that's when the administration now is starting to feel itself, and now you're starting to cross the line, you know. And, you know, and I've been the first to support them as much as I can, but, you know, there's a line for everything, and I think that's the line. I mean, we're trying to help get the public option through. I'm not interested in getting Barack Obama reelected or Rahm Emanuel reelected. Really not. I'm really not. I'm more interested in getting some laws passed Because I think if they do the right thing, all the other stuff take care of itself. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I think they start getting too much into politics. And I don't think he is. I'm just saying, if they start getting too much into politics, and, well, you know, this and this and that, that's when the Democrats are going to lose. Republicans win that way. I give them granted. They win that way, Bob. But in the end, the country becomes worse.
Oh, yeah. Democrats, yeah, sure it does. And
Democrats have to focus on doing the right thing and letting the cards fall away.
Democrats have to focus on doing, because the Republicans are very good at making a lot of noise and looking like they're doing something while not accomplishing anything. I mean, we saw that in the 12 years that they held the House. There was nothing of any value or substance that came out of it, and the few things that they did do were manifestly bad for the average working class in this country. So, you know, Democrats are charged, you know, certainly that Democratic majority in both houses, such as it is, was created on a groundswell of support for the idea of fixing what's messed up. And it's the perception that they're not doing it with the force and authority that we know we gave them that is frustrating so many liberals.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I saw the statement that he made when he's talking about it's just a small slither, and I see that he's trying to redefined it. Now, I don't know if that's just wordplay or does he really believe it. I know that he keeps saying that the main thing is we've got to figure out a way to bring down costs, whether it's a public option and we rename it or something like that. So that seems to be where they're going. But the bottom line is they have to pass something that works. You know, you can call it public option. I don't care what you call it. But it has to be a government, you know, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the only way you can drive down costs. Insurance companies, co-ops, or whatever, they'll just drive the co-ops out of business. That's like a joke.
Well, right. The co-ops are just sitting ducks created for the insurance industries to either kill or absorb.
Exactly.
So you're exactly correct. Gary, I got a couple more blinking lights, but it's great to hear from you.
Take them, man.
All right, have a good night, and I'm so glad you called.
Okay.
All right, bye now. I think, as Gary notes, that the politics that we're witnessing calls for a lot more than what we're seeing in the way. Well, I mean, the right wing is very good at doing gut response political reaction. We are better and smarter than them, and we owe it to ourselves to do better analysis. So, I get what Gary's getting at. An email in from our pal Allison in Idaho, at least for a little while longer. She says, welcome back. Thank you. She also says, we're having a town hall on health care next week here in Coeur d'Alene. I don't know whether to go and watch the spectacle, our paper's managing editor is moderating, or cower under my desk with a bulletproof vest. Well, Allison, my thought on that is that you have to know first, is your elected representative holding the town hall a Democrat or a Republican? If the guy's a Republican, there's no risk of them screaming, you know, Nazi or Heil Hitler at him, and, you know, they'll all show up with their guns and everything will be fine. If the guy is a Democrat, however, it's a different story altogether, and you've seen it, but fortunately, by now, Barney Frank has provided the roadmap for how you deal with these freaks. In your position, I can't suggest what you should do, but I know I would be, I know that I would, hate to miss out on the spectacle of putting a light, as it were, on these right-wing freaks and showing exactly where and what they are. Any way you slice it, though, the bulletproof vest is still a pretty doggone good idea. So thanks for the note, Allison. I appreciate it. The Foxhole Atheist also says Obama needs to forward some of the nastier death threats to Malloy. Mike Cannon would read the letters on the air with the author's email. Let us listeners deal with the racists. And see, that's the thing. Again, that goes back. That's the thing that the right-wingers don't understand. We're not a bunch of pusillanimous kumbaya-singing hippies anymore. I don't know that we ever were. We just prefer peace to violence. But if you take those folks in the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation as your starting point, you know that we have heroism in us. Greg McKendry, John Bostet, Robert Birdwell, Terry Uselton, Jamie Parkey. They didn't run and hide from the crazy right-winger with the guns. So that, you know, that does come into play. Let's see who we got here. Hey, welcome to the program.
You got Richard.
Well, hey, Richard, how are you?
I'm not very happy about the healthcare thing. You can imagine that. I haven't put all this time into into it just to see this mess. But anyway, last time we spoke, I was going to go call my representative Miller and ask him why he voted against Kucinich's amendment.
Right.
It was an amendment, right?
Yes.
And also asked about his position on single payer health care. I've gotten no response.
That's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while, right. It's been almost 2 weeks now. And I'm upset. I think, let me jump topics here for a moment. There is a class of clinic that I'm not very familiar with, but we've got a couple here in my county. They're called community clinics. Have you ever heard that phrase?
I have heard that phrase.
Now, I took my son to one because I could get an appointment quickly, and they are under contract to the Contra Costa Health Plan. So this was a few years ago. And I've heard good things about them. They're extremely busy. They serve poor people, have a dedicated crew, and I'm impressed. But they're so busy, I can't get them on the phone. And that concerns me, although it does give an indication of how much they're being used.
Oh, their services are utilized, and I'm sure that they are overworked and profoundly underfunded.
Exactly. And the thing I don't know is where the money comes from, because they're a different system from the counties, from the county's health services. So, and they're a hell of a lot smaller. That's about all I have to say. In terms of health cooperatives, I don't like the idea, but if it's all we've got, I wonder if there is lemonade to be made out of that lemon.
I know exactly the mindset of where you are. And frankly, I don't think there is any lemonade to be made, Richard.
Well, I don't know. Of course, I'm very upset about what's been going on, what's been coming down on the federal level. And, I mean, we're looking at the tip of the iceberg here. I think that the overarching concern is corruption. I mean, we're stuck with that.
The Republican Party is fueled by it.
Well, but...
And to a certain extent, so is ours.
Yeah, that's my point. There's, as far as I know, conflict of interest is off the table as far as our legislators are concerned. It once existed, and no more. As I recall, they voted it down. They voted it out.
Well, see, my concern with the co-ops isn't the ability of the co-op to deliver services, but the fact that if they succeed, they will look like takeover fodder for an insurance company. In other words, we've just created an insurance company farm system, to use a baseball analogy.
Sure.
And if they fail, they will hang out to dry a whole lot of people who are dependent upon them, and then immediately drive them back into the loving arms and the not-so-tender mercies of the for-profit insurance corporations.
Now, that can happen. You know, That's one scenario.
In which case, we lose on both fronts. And I don't know. I guess there's a scenario where they succeed beyond anyone's wildest expectations.
And form the and formed the Trojan horse to get single payer in. So, you know, neither of us can read the tea leaves on this. But, you know, in terms of your argument, yeah, I've seen it happen, you know. You're right. I put together a group of editors for something we used to have around here called the Rockridge Health Plan, which was a small, you know, really tiny version of what Kaiser should have been. And they couldn't make it. They got taken over by a private outfit.
Just gobbled right up.
Huh?
Just gobbled right up, sure.
Gobbled right up and essentially shut it down. Because they went belly up, too. The private outfit went belly. It was headquartered in the Deep South somewhere. I can't even remember.
Probably Health South.
No, it wasn't Health South. It was, you know, I don't know. They're all over the place. But, well, I mean, the thing is, why did Miller vote against Kucinich's amendment? I mean, I need an answer about that. So far, I don't have it. And I'm paranoid at this point. I'm wondering, you know, did my guy suddenly get scooped up by the health insurance industry? Are they paying him money? We're looking at everything is corrupt in the sense that, well, I shouldn't say everything. We got a few good guys. But how much of this explains the behavior of our Democrats? I looked at the graph for Baucus's take, and it's not how much he's taken from the insurance industry in a sense. Yeah, we know that. But it's how much he's got in reserve. This guy, I mean, he's sitting on a ton of money. He's a mini Gingrich. And I don't know if you remember this about Gingrich, but Gingrich, the most dangerous thing about Gingrich when he was the boss was that he was sitting on everybody's money.
Well, absolutely.
He was running this slush fund called GOPAC.
Oh, I remember it well. As corrupt as the day is long and richer than Croesus.
Exactly. Do my bidding, or you don't get any of this money.
And see, they do that real well, and that's what we need a little bit of our, you know, we need a little doing of that on our own without all the corruption. You know, there's power to be wielded in the speaker's chair.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the other thing about Gingrich, if we forget, you know, is that Gingrich got booted out by his own people.
Yeah, because the manifest just pandemic corruption that was all over him.
Well, but he was also a threat to them because he held the money. He held their campaign funds, in a sec. These people went out and say, don't donate to individual candidates. Donate to my fund.
Okay, well, that makes some sense. Hey, Richard, I do have to roll on because we're right up at the end of things. But great observations. And, you know, I still want you to get an answer from George Miller. I hope you do.
Well, I'll get on it again. You know, I'm I'm coming unglued.
I understand.
I'm on Medicare. I'm older than you. I'm on Medicare. And Medicare's got a ways to go before it is satisfactory. So I feel like I'm riding on the tail of this movement. Anyway.
But I think in many ways you're ahead of the curve that the movement's on. Because you've seen some of the stuff beforehand and you recognize it when you see it.
Well, I'm a health commissioner, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. Got to roll, Richard.
Okay.
All right.
Another
take care.
Time, Bob.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
And the program is about to end with about a minute and a half left. I can't take any more calls. I'm sorry for the ones that I didn't get to because I've got about four lit up. But you know what? We'll be back tomorrow night, and that's what Fridays on the Front Porch are for. I look forward to it. Thanks again to all of you who give of your time and of your resources and of your money to keep us going. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com has a PayPal button. And we do welcome your support, and we most assuredly do need your support. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, for all that they do to make this happen, as well as Sue and Lottie and Jean and Susan and Texas Betsy. Everyone. Every single person is a vital part of the continuing experiment that the Horn has become. And you are all of you my heroes. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and CoalRiverWind.org. The hardest working, bravest people I know. Always, always, Gina, it's all for you.
Over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Give countdown. Six. Five. Four. Three. Two. One.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there. How y'all doing? Welcome to the Guy James Show. Yes, indeed. Guy James here with you live on this Thursday afternoon, August the 20th. August the 20th, a big day in my family. It truly is. It's my brother's birthday, two of my cousins' birthday, three of my cousins' birthday, so four of us. We never forget August the 20th. And of course, we lost a member of our family on August the 20th as well, an important member, but we try and stay happy over all the birthdays. So August the 20th, happy birthday to brother and cousins and everybody that's enjoying this August the 20th. Thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show. It is good to have you along with us this afternoon. We've got a lot to talk about. We had a guest scheduled, and they canceled out about 5 minutes ago, so I guess we'll wait till next week on that one. We hope to have somebody pretty important in the labor movement with us, and they had to cancel out today, so we'll see about having them on next Tuesday or Wednesday. Okay? Wait for that. We had Jimmy Hoffa scheduled for today from the Teamsters, and I guess these high and mighty muckety mucks, they get busy once in a while and have to tell us little folks, sorry, pal, maybe next week. You know, some of you thought I was kidding about the corporate jet yesterday when I talked about it. I wasn't kidding. If we're going to go to important things like the Netroot Nations,
I think it only fitting that Bob and I ride there in style. And it's got not so much to do with style. It's got to do with efficiency, you see. We don't care about the luxuriousness of it. That's not it at all. It just would make our time better spent. Not having to stop at, catch connecting flights. Bob not having to drive all the way from Beckley. Leaving from Beckley International and regional Southwest here in Fort Myers. We could be up there at Pittsburgh or Vegas next year or anything in a snap. All our equipment there. And Bob wouldn't have to, drive out to the airport and pick me up and all that sort of thing. So I was serious about that jet, and so far none of you have kicked into the Horn Jet Fund yet, and I'm very disappointed over that. I've located a very nice, and I'm talking nice now, used Gulfstream 3 for only $2,950,000. It's got really low air miles. It's a beauty. It can carry about, 14 people in style. So, Elo, Sophie, all you people there, the Head On Radio Network staff, we need this. And so, I hope everybody will pitch in and get this thing going. And we've got to think of a clever name for the fund, the Head On Radio Network Jet Fund. Anyway, we're out to raise $2,950,000 for our corporate jet. And we'll have it painted. I don't know what colors Bob is going to want to paint it. He's probably going to want to paint it University of West Virginia colors. And I'm probably going to want to paint it scarlet and gray. So we'll probably have to compromise, and the front half will be scarlet and gray, and the back half will be blue and yellow. Ooh, I think that's going to clash a little bit. Maybe we'll just split it down the middle from one side to the other, and depending on which side of the plane you're looking at, that's a better idea. Yeah. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here on the program today. And if you would like to call and make a donation for the Horn Jet Fund, why let us know, and we'll make special arrangements for that. Again, it's only $2,950,000. I think we should be able to arrange that in what? 3 weeks max, something like that. Steward or stewardess. Sophie's asking on the chat room, steward or stewardess. Well, one of each, of course. I tell you, the comments, for those of you listening at iTunes or some other venue, be sure and head on over to the Head On Radio Network chat room. They're crazy people there. They really are, but they're fun. They are fun. And right now they're talking about hot pants. I haven't thought about those for a long time. Long time. Anyway, welcome to all you liberal progressive listeners today, maybe even a few of you crazy conservatives as well, and I am saying crazy. You liberals who are in favor of death panels and, you're Marxists and Nazis and socialists and baby killers and tax race and commie pinko nasty people, welcome to the program today. It's good to have all of you along with us. That's the brush that we're being painted with, so we might as well just, grow into it, huh? I can't believe some of the things that I have seen the past few days. I had a chance last night. I took a couple of hours and just surfed around the net at some of the more notorious websites. And you talk about hatred. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like it. There is more hatred right now, and it's for a variety of reasons. Number one, they're sad to be out of power. They're furious at being out of power. Number two, we have a black man in the White House, and that's not sitting well with people at all. And many of you Republicans, many of you conservatives, many of you right-wingers, you neocons, whatever we like to call you, you can deny it all you want to, but we know that much of this is over racism. We know it is. Absolutely it is. And I'm sure by now all of you have seen these pictures of people at these town hall meetings and at the Obama meetings with guns. I, as somebody who tried to attend two, one Cheney function and one Bush function, and had to be corralled into one of these free speech zones, I wasn't carrying a sign. I was wearing a Democratic Club t-shirt. Yes, that was my offense. And had to stand in one of these free speech zones about a mile from where the vice president was, and at least that far away from where the president was.